place to go. Hello, place to go. Darling, hello, place to go. Hello, place to go.
Some familiar music in the morning here on the Steve Cochran Show. Hello, everybody. I'm Justin Kaufman in for Steve, and it sounded way too prog this morning. And it's great to be back in the morning here on 720 WGN with Dave Ennett and G, who I have not worked with, but it's so great to see. We know each other. It's good to see
you. Yeah, it's finally great to actually like work with you today. We're going to see how our chemistry is.
That's right.
And you better bring it, Justin.
I'm ready to bring it. And all the crew that's here, Steve Grzanich and Mary Vandeveld, everybody. Yeah. Good to see everybody, and looking forward to a great broadcast this morning.
Welcome back.
Good to see you. Were you here late last night, too?
I was. I had an extension at 720 last night, but that's, you know what? I said, no way. I'm not. The adrenaline is going to push me through because I get to work with Mary Vandeveld.
Oh, now, boy. I see you have the glasses on now. Do you normally wear glasses, or are you a contacts person?
I'm so glad you asked that. I have new glasses. It's a new look. I knew I was coming back to the Steve Cochran Show, and I was like, I need a new look.
I can't just walk in. I ask you about it.
Yeah. Same look.
They make you look a lot smarter.
Thank you.
Yeah, I love them.
I didn't know with like that short turnaround if those peepers needed a little bit of a rest and maybe you were a contacts person.
I usually am a contacts guy, but the Warby Parker glasses, they're killing it. Everywhere I go, I look smart.
Just for the record, I thought you looked smarter already.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate that.
So the glasses are cool, but what about the softball team? I want to know about the softball team.
Oh, there you go.
Oh,
yeah.
Please.
I didn't want to start the show this way. I had a, I really wanted to ease into it, but of course the WGN softball team.
I didn't even know there was a softball team.
I know. They're on their way to the championship.
You haven't been asked to be on it?
Oh, I think there's a reason I haven't been asked.
I wasn't asked either, G. Never.
I was the kid that was the last one picked on any sports team.
That's outrageous. You don't read your email, Mary Vandeveld. I feel like I was on your porch trying to recruit you like the coach at Alabama.
Don't
There's
think so.
People
Maybe
who don't even work here who are on that team.
Wow.
Hey, Dave. Cool it.
Yeah,
cool. Don't let people know about the ringers on the GN team, right?
Oh, why? This is a secret?
Yeah, no. There's everyone doing a podcast. They're doing podcasts. If there's a good player on the team who's got athletic prowess, you say, oh, yeah, well, he does a podcast.
I see. So the rules are stretched just to make sure that you've got somebody good on the team.
You know what that's called? That's called good coaching. That's what it is. We got a great show lined up today. It's going to be awesome. Heather Sharon's going to join us from the Daily Line to talk a little bit about the closed door meeting today for the Chicago Teachers Union delegation as they look to strike. The Chicago Public Schools and the Chicago Teachers Union have not come to a contract agreement, and today they will set a date. And many are looking at the day after Columbus Day, which would be October 15th. So we'll have a conversation about that coming up. And we're also going to have Greg Flam back in the building, the DuPage Picker, and Swap Meets. I know you like it, 312-981-7200. If you got collectibles you want to brag about, or I don't know, just see how much they're worth. Greg Flam comes in studio. That'll be later in the show. And, of course, today the NHL season kicks off. How about that? Alex DeBrincat's going to be with us. Breakfast with a Blackhawk a little bit later. I'm excited, Dave. I feel like this team had a great offseason. They start the season in Prague. This is going to be a great season for the Blackhawks.
You know, he's going to be with us, Breakfast with a Blackhawk for us, but it's probably like mid-afternoon for Alex.
What is Steve doing in Prague?
He's not there yet.
He's not. He's on
in
his
fact,
way.
He hasn't even left yet.
Tonight, I think he leaves.
Give me a break.
So what the heck? Tonight. He should be here.
Yeah, he could have done. Yeah, he could have done Extension 720. I would have done his show for him. We just flip it up. You know?
Guys take that up between yourselves. Yeah. I'm not getting in the middle of that.
Well, of course, I want to know all about it because I feel like there should be a video series. Steve Cochran takes Prague.
I think there will be.
Yeah, I want to see how he does there. I have so many questions about it.
You know that he has been taking language lessons, and he's been practicing.
All right.
And, of course, I think the really funny video would be just him on the airplane because of all of his particulars of flying.
You know he's going to get seated next to a baby.
Yeah.
And you know it.
You know
I'm
it.
Wondering if he ever is going to recline his seat for the entire leg of the
trip. Yeah, he's really against the reclining. I have to say I agree with Steve. I'm never a recliner. I feel like that's an 80s thing to do, to recline
on planes. No, yeah. I think Dave and I recline a little bit.
Here's what I do.
Okay.
First of all, the exception is a transatlantic flight. Okay. I think you gotta at least, even like a quarter of an inch.
Not all the way, but some of the way.
And especially if the person in front of you reclines, and then you kind of have to.
Yeah, right.
And that happened to me on the way to Ireland. And I mean,
what
literally,
do you do at that point? Yeah.
I mean, I was trying to do a crossword puzzle on my trade table, and all of a sudden, I'm like, I got the.
If you were that guy, the Dave Bennett sighs, you would have heard behind, like, once I can hear that over the hum of the plane.
Dave sighs? I didn't know
this.
Oh,
yeah, you get some good Dave Bennett sighs in there, especially on a transatlantic flight.
I've always been that person that ends up booking a flight so late and last minute that I end up in the very back row next to the toilets, where the seats don't even recline.
You and me both. That's exactly what I do. I'm always the last row. This is it? Really? I'm always the last row, and I'm always the last terminal. Or the last gate in the terminal, the one with the round one where they're all shared. And I'm always like, is this the only place that planes come out of? And I'm like, oh, yeah, no, it's the only place that planes come out of where the price is this cheap and waited to the last minute. That's the Justin Kaufman style. And I always feel like I'm always in the same gate. They know me by now.
Now, if you're in that last seat where you can't recline and the person in 3A reclines, which means the person in 4A, 5A, all the way back to you, now you have no choice. You can't recline, and you've got somebody's seat back in your lap.
And you've got the aromas of the toilets.
Yeah. I was told there'd be no math this morning. I'm glad that you worked out the 3A and the 4A. It got really algebra.
My pleasure.
Okay. The Steve Cochran Show is underway here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in for Steve today.
It's time to get your kicks. Get your kicks. Don't kick. Get your kicks. With the top 666, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
All right, time for the top 666. Let's get right to it. Number one, impeachment news continues to devour Washington, D.C., as now the focus moves to the State Department. Congress and the State Department are exchanging angry worded letters. The Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, says Congress is bullying his staff, and Congress says the Secretary of State is stonewalling and has an obvious conflict of interest because of allegedly being on the White House phone call to the Ukrainian president. And meanwhile, last night, the New York Times reported that the president, in a closed-door meeting this summer on the border and immigration issues, inquired into whether or not they could shoot migrants in the legs to slow them down when crossing the border.
And Justin, there's an update to this morning, some developments on this morning. Some of these State Department employees have gone on their own to Congress saying they're willing to testify. And the State Department Inspector General is going to give some sort of briefing today to members of Congress on a new issue. Yeah.
I mean, that's the issue, is that the State Department usually works in its own, doesn't necessarily have to do anything with Congress. But the idea that the Inspector General is going there seems to be an unprecedented move. Back to the story last night in the New York Times about more. I don't want to get into the specifics of what was said in that meeting, but it seems to me, and Steve Grzanich, you can back me up on this. 2 years, 3 years ago, the White House was leaking like an old ship. There were so many leaks coming out of every meeting that was there, and they went out of their way to collect cell phones or to move things, and it seemed to die down. But maybe because of this impeachment inquiry, but whatever it is, the newspapers are getting more and more leaks from the White House again, like this situation, which is just really to embarrass the president.
Well, or the other thing too is maybe the employees of these organizations who are in a lot of, like, for instance, the State Department, most of the employees we're talking about are line employees, so they're civil servants who will be there regardless of what the political atmosphere is like. One of the things I saw last night is they don't have the money for their own legal defense to fight some of this stuff on their own, if that's what it comes down to. And the second is maybe they see the floodgates opening in terms of congressional oversight that they feel they have no choice but to cooperate with.
There's nothing, they're obviously looking at that statement and looking at the story about shooting migrants in the legs is horrifying. I'm not sure it went past it's just no context to it. And that's the problem when you get to these leaks, is that there's no context. And then you find yourself going, is that a bad joke? Was it in bad taste? Was it what? You just find yourself, you know, are you formalizing and making serious something that was said offhand? Was it serious and we should take it? That's where you get crazy with these leaks that are people coming out of meetings that were behind closed doors and you don't know what the context was. That's the only problem I have with that story. All right, next. Today, delegates for the Chicago Teachers Union will hold a closed-door meeting. What's with all these closed-door meetings? Closed-door meeting to set a strike date, looking like the day after Columbus Day, October 15th. This is a big issue. Yesterday, CPS put up a website to show all of Chicagoans what their offer was. CTU got mad about that and said, if we really want to be transparent, why don't we live stream these negotiations? And it's really getting testy.
Wow.
But it's also testy in the way that they're both on the same, they're both on the same side. Maybe not on the same page, but these, the union and the mayor's office and CPS, they all come the same, you know, tree of politics. So it's not like partisan politics as we know it in D.C. These are Democrats fighting with Democrats.
I'm a news junkie, but I'd love to see a live stream of those negotiations.
I guess they do it. Last night, I had Cassie Walker-Burke from Chalkbeat on, and she was saying that they do that in Denver. Live streams transparent. They make it all like, if you want to do a meeting, it has to be, it's live stream. So it's just interesting. I'd probably super boring, but interesting. Next. Mayor Lightfoot's getting a little blowback for hiring former 45th Ward Alderman John Arena to the six-figure planning department job. The reason this is important is that the mayor didn't have to post a job, because I guess sometimes you don't have to do that. But the rub is that the city's in the midst of a hiring freeze, because if you remember, the mayor went in front of us and did a big primetime speech about the massive budget hole and how she was going to shut everything down, including a hiring freeze at the city. So it's just peculiar that you would say that and then give a job to a former ally who did not get reelected to City Hall. John Arena lost, and I believe it was the 45th Ward Alderman, Jim Gardner, who beat him, actually called out and said that it was inappropriate, and the mayor's like, mind your business.
Is this an essential gig? Like, what's
the deal?
Yeah,
it's a senior advisor to in a planning department, so it's kind of a cush job.
Oh.
And
why can't I get an offer like this?
Yeah.
This is what I want. I want a cush job, and I want a little bit of nepotism in my life.
The John Arena has the qualifications, so I don't want to make it seem like he's a family member to Lori Lightfoot, but he does have, I mean, he was a former alderman, and he obviously had his stake in a lot of planning issues in his ward. The big question, though, is just the timing, where you're like, listen, I thought we were coming up on a massive budget hole. Why are you giving allies who, you know,
gotcha,
their own?
I just didn't know if this was like super essential.
I think it's 123,000. It's probably not needed.
Okay.
But that's what he's getting, 123
gotcha.
Grand. All right, next.
All right.
New York City has banned the phrase illegal alien.
I was called that when I first came to this country. I was never illegal. I was legal. Sorry.
If you're called that now in New York City, it's punishable by fine up to $250,000.
Right. I was called a legal alien, not illegal. Everybody,
well, there you go. See, they're parsing words.
Yes.
No, but the interesting thing about that, I just feel like there's a lot of other things you could call people that are much more difficult and tense and terse that aren't that you don't get fined for when it comes to slurs and things of that nature. But I guess this is one of them.
It was fascinating because it's like you come from another planet, not just like from another country. Like you're an immigrant. It's like you come from Mars.
This is really blowback to what we've been seeing more and more, the viral videos of people yelling at mostly people with brown skin at different places and saying, go back to your country or, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But an interesting move in New York City. Next. All right. Money Magazine just put out the top five places to live in the U.S. Clarksville, Tennessee was number one, but Chicago did have representation. Number three, Fulton River District. Neighborhood Fulton River District, the number three place to live in the whole country.
Any of you guys ever live there?
No, I don't even know where that's at.
No, I know exactly where this is.
It's a very small area.
This is the area next to the Blommer Chocolate Factory.
Yes, nailed
it. So right where...
Near East Bank.
There, a little bit west of that.
Yep.
And before you get over to Westtown, so it's tiny.
It's not West Loop, it's not Westtown, it's Fulton River District.
Because there is also a Fulton River Park, a tiny little park, and that's the little
area
around it.
It's just amazing to me because I know that area and it's nice, I guess, but I like to think that that's the number one place in Chicago, let alone the third in the country.
Does it smell good?
It smells like chocolate.
There you go.
Yeah, that part's amazing.
That's the reason.
Yeah, there's a lot of good restaurants popping up over there, too, so...
All right, and lastly, the Washington Nationals got the Josh Hader last night to beat the Milwaukee Brewers to move to the NLDS. They'll face the LA Dodgers. Dave, great game last night, but again, the only problem I have is that all of that drama, Christian Yelich, all the great September, and it comes down to one game and one run, and the Brewers are out.
And the guy who replaced Yelich for the Brewers was the guy in right field who overruns the ball. It gets all the way into the corner, and they score three runs, and that's... That's how it goes. I mean, Milwaukee had a great run, unbelievable September to get back into contention and overtake the Cubs.
Don't you think they should have more than one game for the wild card?
You think that might be? I mean,
maybe just three. They could do a doubleheader.
Such a long season.
A doubleheader.
I know. Done. There you go. I like Mary's idea. Doubleheader.
Did Super Joe watch the game?
Unfair.
Almost made it to the ninth inning.
Oh, gotcha.
All right, that's your top six at six.
That's it. That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
Please rise. Court is now in session.
That music means only one thing. Karen Conti is with us. Karen, of course, our legal analyst here at WGN Radio. She broadcasts on Sunday nights when not preempted by sports, like most of us. And joins us here on the Steve Cochran Show every Wednesday. Karen, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning.
Good to talk to you. All right, so let's get into some of these stories, because there's a couple of things that are happening locally that obviously have legal implications. Why don't we start with, we saw yesterday a lot more, there was a FOIA request when it came to the corruption case of State Senator Martin Sandoval and the raids, the FBI raids. And we're talking about, you know, it seems to have to do with transportation contracts and things of that nature. When the FBI decides to raid a politician, there are obviously already things that have gone through the machinations. It's not something they just did on a whim.
That's right. And there has to be a reason for the subpoena. There has to be a reason for the raid. And usually it's a grand jury that will approve of the issuing of that subpoena. And they've made a decision that instead of reaching out and asking for the documents from him, that they have some fear that he might destroy them or hide them. So they're going to do this in a way that's kind of a surprise tactic. So never a good thing. I mean, it could be that he's not a target. It could be that someone else is a target. But generally speaking, when they do it in this fashion, they've got some suspicion that he's got something that could incriminate him.
And usually when they do that kind of raid, is it how long does it take for us as a public to understand what that is or what it was? Do we count on the media for that, or will you see something show up from the FBI or something in court?
More in court, because you're going to then see what documents they've taken and what they're going to use as evidence in a trial, and we're going to know that they were eventually obtained from that search. So it's not something that we get to know right away, because a lot of the stuff that they're doing is still investigative, meaning, you know, it's still secret until the indictments come down, until the evidence is out, and until the trial begins.
You know, we saw that the Sun-Times, they went and did a FOIA request to find out more about it. But does the FBI office, and this is a weird question, but does the FBI office and the Justice Department, do they kind of give the press an up sort of a little bit of nod of what's going to happen, or give it a little bit more context because of their relationships with the press?
You know, it's kind of on a case-by-case basis. And I think that, you know, the Justice Department does a good job of really, I mean, they need, when they prosecute somebody, they want it to be a fair process. They really do. I mean, they're prosecutors, sure, they want to win. But in court, you know, they don't want to have the judge say, well, you leaked all of this information, now this guy can't get a fair trial, right. And now we have all these things. So, I mean, they really do try to be on the straight and narrow, not because, you know, they necessarily care about the defendant, but they really just want to make sure that there is a fair process so that whatever conviction there is sticks. And yeah, do they have relationships with the press? They absolutely do, but they're not going to compromise their trial and their plight here to appease the public.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of fair trials and fairness, I guess you'd say, let's move on to the story this week about Dan Webb, who's been assigned special prosecutor to get more understanding of what happened with the state's attorney's handling of the Jussie Smollett case. It came out that Dan Webb had given money in the case of a $1,000 check to Kim Fox's election campaign in 2016. And I think the surprising thing to everybody is he goes, I don't recall. You know, I give a lot of money to a lot of people. It was a strange way to respond. And it kind of pulled the rug back a little bit to say, is this how politics works in this county or in this country, where it seems like, you know, checks are handed out without really any idea who they're being sent to?
Well, first of all, I'm going to give you a little opinion here. I mean, I think Dan Webb is beyond reproach. I mean, he is not only a fabulous lawyer, he's a very fair guy. This is a guy who's a Republican. He was appointed by Ronald Reagan as a U.S. attorney, and he calls himself a Republican. Although he supported Hillary Clinton in the primary, he gave money to Anita Alvarez before she was voted out. So he gave $3,000 to her prior to the campaign. After she lost, he gave $1,000 to Kim Fox. I don't make much of it. You know, Dan Webb has given $300,000+ over the last 10 years to various judges and politicians. This is what they do. Winston & Strawn is a huge firm. They support different judges and support different politicians. They throw parties. They raise money. They do all kinds of stuff. And this is what they do on both sides of the aisle. So the fact that Dan Webb was asked to give $1,000 to someone who might be a state's attorney someday, absolutely. I would be surprised if he hadn't. The problem here is not that he is going to be influenced because he likes Kim Fox or he gave money to Kim Fox. It's really the appearance that people are going to say, wow, you know, now let's just say he comes down and says, Kim Fox did absolutely nothing wrong, right?
Right.
People are going to say, well, you gave her some money, so you must have liked her enough to give her $1,000 because most of us don't pull that money out of our pocket. So that's the problem, the appearance, not that he is going to do anything wrong.
But for him, $1,000 overall, when you're thinking about if he's donating $300,000, isn't really a large percentage. Now, at what point would you be concerned if it was $5,000 or $10,000? When would it be a conflict of interest?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question. And I think that is the question that people like you should decide, because it's the appearance that matters. See, the whole thing we're doing here with this Jussie Smollett thing is the appearance of what Kim Fox did was very suspect. Maybe she did everything by the book, but we all kind of looked at it and said, this doesn't pass the smell test, right? So now we have a special prosecutor, and I think the idea is he has to be completely neutral on this in order to have his result be appreciated and understood and have this book closed once and for all.
Yeah.
So again, I asked you that question. At what point do you think someone's donation means that they have a preference for that person?
Yeah, well, I mean,
I don't know the answer.
That's a great point, because obviously the newspapers this week decided it was $1,000 because they've been talking all about this. All right.
Well, but that's the way things work. You listen, I get asked like every day, probably five times a day, to support a judge or a politician or something. I mean, I am asked for thousands of dollars, and you know, it's hard not to say.
Karen, that's because you're rich.
It's all the money I make on WGN.
Yeah, right.
Thank you.
Karen, let's move to our last story, which is about R. Kelly. Another story we saw this week that got everybody's attention was just the headline in the Tribune about that he's upset that he can't have all of his girlfriend's visit at once, which was very peculiar. And I think a funny kicker headline, but it made me ask the question about what is the actual policy and procedure when you want girlfriends to come see you in jail. I was completely confused by the story.
I mean, if you look at the MCC, that's the Metropolitan Correctional Center, their rules go on and on and on. This is a very, very restricted place. Even lawyers going in there. I had a lawyer go in there one time, associate, and her skirt, her very conservative skirt, like rode up about 3 inches when she sat down. They kicked her out because it was too short. It really wasn't too short. Yes, they have to control what's going on there. This is not a dating hookup site single bar. This is a prison where people are accused of murder and crimes that will put people away forever. So, you know, one person at a time is clearly a rule that is appropriate. I mean, if there are lawyers, those are different rules for lawyers, because they have been vetted and you can have two lawyers or maybe more at the same time. But this is ridiculous. And I'm sorry, Steve Greenberg is a decent lawyer, but why would he bring this motion? I mean, I want my two girlfriends here.
It's a strange motion, right?
Especially because it doesn't make his client look good at all either.
No, like, what is he, some prima donna with like multiple wives that he can have? It's almost as if this is a Hollywood thing instead of a very serious charge that is, you know, if it sticks, it's going to put him in jail forever.
Karen, beyond the legal opinion, I wonder if it's just to get the headline, if it has more to do with keeping R. Kelly in the headlines as he kind of goes away until trial time.
What would be the purpose of making him look like this? Like, he's suffering in jail. Well, that's what happens if you go to jail. I mean, no, he is presumed innocent until he's convicted. But this is a prison. This is not a cushy place. And, of course, he's not going to do well in there because, you know, R. Kelly has had a very fabulous high-end lifestyle, and he's very restricted in there. But they can't make rules. I mean, they brought that motion about him being able to use his computer or compose music. Yeah. You don't let prisoners have computers in there. This is just not the way it works. And Steve Greenberg knows that. I just don't know what his point is here to try to make his client look like some, you know, special case here that we have to treat differently.
Text question this morning. Should R. Kelly have more than one girlfriend visit him? No. we'll skip that text question. Karen Conti, great as always. You can listen to Karen on Sunday nights here on WGN Radio, and also find her, Karen Conti Law, all over social media and the website. Karen, thanks so much. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Have a great show.
All right. There you go. She hits it on the head. How are you find any sympathy for R. Kelly?
I mean,
that he can't get all of his girlfriends to visit him at once.
Yeah, I can only think that it's about grabbing those headlines and making news, but it just makes him more infamous. You know what I mean?
I don't know. So.
Is it for the made-for-TV movie later down the road?
Yeah, maybe there's a contract in it somewhere for him. Steve Cochran Show rolling along here. Justin Kaufman in for Steve this morning. The whole crew is with us. 312-981-7200 coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. Artist Tanika Johnson's going to join us.
We're
excited to talk with her. And also, a little bit later, Heather Sharon on the update on what's going to happen with the closed-door meeting with the Chicago Teachers Union today.
Justin, you know what? At the top of the show, I think you got interrupted. Did you say hi to Super Joe and Vivian?
I did. Well, you know, I had a chance to say hi to them before the show started.
Okay. Well, they're here, everybody.
They are
looking
here.
Amazing behind the glass, they per
are.
Usual.
They make the show work. You know, we got to hit the jingles at the top of the show now. It's at right at the top, and it's important to hit. And I can't tell you how much backwards math.
Mm-hmm. That's why
Super Joe is doing.
That's why he's super.
There's a lot of numbers being thrown out.
Vivian,
you don't have to show your math every time you talk.
I can do backwards math. I've done it my whole life.
Yeah, you're good.
You want to trade jobs? Oh,
okay, Dave, calm down. We love you too.
No. I mean, I know.
We're teasing.
From Dave's experience, he can tell you how long a field goal attempt is like that.
Oh, I know. Well, listen.
Whatever yard line they're on, he's like, that's a 45.
Actually, I totally messed myself up during
Did
the game
you?
On Saturday with trying to figure out. Northwestern was trying 2-point conversion, and I'm like, okay, well, that'll make it a 40. No, wait a minute. That'll make it. Whatever.
That was the only time in your life you haven't been perfect.
Oh, stop.
It is. It's fun to hear you on the broadcast. Obviously, the Cats not having the best start to the season, but you know what? It's early.
Same as last year.
That's exactly. It's almost like the formula. But it was interesting to see Coach Fitz get a little testy, as he's known to do at the press conference not too long ago when they were talking about preparation, things like that.
Yeah, he has a little fun with it.
He really does.
He likes to jab everybody.
And he's going to join us. I believe he's going to join us on Friday, right? Mm-hmm. I have a question for you guys. This has been bothering me, and right before we go to the news here. So I live on a block.
Yes, unleash, Justin. I want to see you upset.
This is Justin Unleash. I live on a block where it's like a whole town home complex, right?
Gotcha.
And on the one side, you know, obviously everyone's getting excited because Halloween's about to start, mm-hmm, and here comes the month of Halloween, and it becomes decoration time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the one side, the side on the west, they are Johnny comes lately to the town. They're a lot of the people are new families, things like that, and they have completely started decorations for Halloween last weekend in the rain.
They
all got together and they started. I just think it's too early. It's too early. It was September 29th.
Okay, the first time I moved to Chicago, I had no idea that Halloween is such a huge thing.
Yeah.
And in Chicago area, everybody loves Halloween, and they decorate. They decorate for Halloween the way they decorate for Christmas.
No,
it's the
absolutely.
Same thing.
But it has to be in October. I don't think you can start doing Halloween decorations in September.
Well, how many days early in September?
September 20, whatever it was on Saturday.
But it's kind of a fall thing, too.
You would do that? You would accept that, Vanderbilt? I came in this morning going, Vanderbilt's got my back.
Well, is it the pumpkins? Is it the pumpkins
no,
that you're
the
worried
lights.
About?
They're,
not
doing, they're doing lights and all this kind of stuff, and they're
ghouls
putting it together.
And ghosts
now,
and
you know,
zombies.
It overshadows my awesome inflatable spider. Which I put out.
So you're jealous.
You can't put out the big inflatables yet. Too early for the inflatables.
Too early for the inflatables.
Yeah, I'll take some pumpkins because they'll get eaten up anyway, and they'll have to go out and
pumpkins.
Buy more. Which
now,
I always
laugh
at.
There's no actual gourds out yet, but it was just like the lights. It's
I
just
love the lights.
Lights.
The lights are great. That's They're not even getting messed up in the rain.
I know, but I just feel like that's a Christmas kind of thing.
Oh no, I love the orange lights. I love all the festive. I like decorating for any kind of.
I'd be okay if there was a tombstone down there. Maybe some webs.
I have to tell you though. Halloween has gotten so big, and it was not that yeah, way. Right. It wasn't. I mean, this is a fairly recent yeah, phenomenon.
Dave's on Team Justin.
I know. I agree with him.
I think it's too early.
As I sip my pumpkin coffee.
He started drinking pumpkin coffee.
I did.
It's September 1st.
I bring it
so
in the
there
morning.
You go.
My wife
that's
box.
That's a taste. I just feel like the idea that they are jumping out of the gate a month plus before Halloween.
But they have a small window to sell the stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. If it brings people joy, if it brings their inner vampire, the inner zombie, there's going to be a tombstone yeah, with your name on it in your yeah, neighbor's yard. That's
well,
what's going
to
happen, Justin.
Now, the hard part, and we got to hit the news here, but the hard part now is my wife is like, oh, you know, maybe we need to up our game.
You do.
So now that, because they're going early, I'm going to have to pay more money for the Halloween decorations in my house.
Better like spiders.
Don't spend more money. Just go out and put them up earlier.
Yeah.
That's all you got to do. Yeah.
All right. We'll take a break and then we'll get to the news here on the Steve Cochran Show. Stay with us.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Steve Cochran Show here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in for Steve, but the whole crew is here. G, Dave Ennett, Steve Rosanich, Mary Vandeveld. Coming up a little bit later in the hour, we'll talk a little bit about today's news. Of course, the closed-door meeting with the Chicago Teachers Union as delegates decide to set a strike date. That is happening today. Obviously, the negotiations are at a little bit of a standstill, and they're looking to set a date that could be within 2 weeks. Something to think about when it comes to a teacher strike in Chicago. Of course, we'll continue to talk about that. But before we do that, we want to focus on one of Chicago's very own artist, Tonika Johnson.
Yes, I wanted, before we bring Tonika in, I just want to praise her a little bit, introduce her, because she won't do it for herself. She's a visual artist and a photographer from Chicago's Inglewood neighborhood, and she often explores segregation and documents the nuance and richness of the Black community. And she is also, in 2017, was named Chicagoan of the Year in Chicago Magazine. So she does pretty incredible work, and she's also got a new project that I want her to talk about as well.
If you're familiar, and this was a big deal when it came out, was the Folded Map Project that really did highlight segregation and inequities in Chicago neighborhoods. She's on the line. Tonika Johnson, thanks for being with us this morning.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. So, you know, as G is excited, let's talk about your new project. What are you working on?
Well, I have a couple of new projects, but the one that I'm actively working on is titled Belonging, and it is examining and exploring specific locations where Black and brown youth have been made to feel like they don't belong, but essentially been racially profiled, and talking to them about their feelings about it and actually photographing them at that location.
And Tonika, this is part of the Chicago Park District's Young Cultural Stewards Program, right?
Yes, I actually collaborated with them this summer on the actual project. They were the first group of teenagers that I actually spoke to about this project, and they, you know, interviewed each other. So throughout the summer, I was definitely working with them on the project Belonging and coming up with questions, yes.
And for somebody listening that may not understand what you're meaning, explain how sometimes that for certain youth, the city north of Roosevelt Road is often uncharted territory. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that for someone that's listening that doesn't quite get that?
Yes. So we're all familiar with Chicago's historic segregation and how it's, you know, still exists today. And so there are several things that kind of perpetuate this longstanding segregation outside of policies and everything else. But what I really wanted to examine was the social impact of segregation and how us being segregated from each other perpetuates a lot of things, not just stereotypes, but how we often interact. And a lot of Black and brown youth, when go to the north side or downtown locations, they don't feel as welcomed. They don't feel as if that's a space where they can truly be themselves, where they can, you know, laugh loudly. They feel constantly watched, or as if they're going to be policed. And so I really wanted to examine that and how that impacts just what they think about Chicago in general. And I really wanted to focus on that specific age group, because how you get treated at that specific age in the city where you're living, where you're from, really can have a potential impact on if you want to remain in that city. And it could contribute to what Chicago has been experiencing amongst the African-American population, which is moving away, whether if it's to another state or to a suburb. And so I really wanted to focus on that population and how they feel in particular places that have been traditionally segregated, such as the North Side, downtown. And what I found is that, you know, they definitely feel as though the city does not cater to their interests and entertainment needs. And the places that do, they feel as if they're policed.
Yeah. Tonika, as an artist, when you want to take on a topic like this that's really more of a social justice issue and about equity and about segregation, how do you approach it? Obviously, you have a great passion for the issue. How do you apply your art to it? Do you start automatically with, okay, I'm going to do a photo collage, or I'm going to do a folded map right. project, or do you start with the topic first and sort of bore out from there?
Every project is different, and being an artist means that you're open to fluidity and kind of tapping into where a project may evolve different from where it began. With Folded Map, I knew specifically that I wanted to highlight inequity, the present day impact of Chicago's segregation. And I knew that I wanted to do it with photography and comparing addresses. The aspect that I did not anticipate was turned out to be the best part of the project, which was the actual residents on the same street in different sides of town meeting each other.
Right.
The project evolved into that. And so I just followed that because I knew that that was an important aspect. For belonging, what happened is that as I was doing a lot of engagements around Folded Map and talking to a lot of teenagers about Folded Map, you know, and telling them that I started the project as a concept when I was their age, you know, on my travels to high school to Lane Tech from Inglewood. And so as I was talking to them about, you know, just navigating Chicago as a teenager, they started sharing with me how it's different for them now. I felt in the 93 to 97 that Chicago was definitely a place where I felt comfortable and could travel, and they did not feel the same. And so I really wanted to understand why. And so that's when the idea of belonging, especially when I just heard earlier this year that Water Tower Place, they institute the policy where teenagers, well, you have to be, if you're under 18, you can't come to Water Tower on the weekend unless you have an adult with you.
Yeah.
And I thought that policy was very interesting. And then shortly after that, another incident happened where a large group of a few hundred Black teenagers came to downtown Water Tower Place during spring break, and it was a huge ordeal. Police were involved. And so those two issues really made me validate what the teenagers that I had been speaking to were saying. And so I knew that I wanted to talk to them and get their stories. And so I knew I wanted to get audio interviews as well as photograph them. But where I was going to photograph them was not revealed to me until I started talking to the teenagers.
Okay.
And they each had a location.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just being open to how it evolves. But definitely focusing on the issue first.
Well, I just kind of wanted to sort of explain to somebody listening, to everyone listening, what the Folded Map Project is like. I just want to describe it. So basically, you would match addresses on the north and south side. So, for example, like you would show a picture of 6129 North Walcott Avenue comparatively with a 6135 South Walcott. Mm-hmm. So that gives the listener kind of an idea of what the Folded Map Project is. But you're doing incredible work, and it's really making a difference.
Thank you so much.
Tanika Johnson, you can find her work online, but you also, of course, if you get a chance to check out the Chicago Folded Project or the map, check it out. She's one of Chicago's very own. She's our guest this morning on Steve Cochran Show. Tanika, keep up the great work, and we look forward to seeing Belongings. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. There you go. And that's an interest. I've been in Watertower. And I talked to some of the people for a story who worked in there about this that policy, the idea mm-hmm. that after a certain time, I think it's 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock, you have to be accompanied by an adult if you're not 18 years old. You have to show ID.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting dichotomy there because they're worried. A lot of the small businesses in Watertower are worried.
I think it's something important to think about because I think we have a tendency, it's only nature to live in your bubble. And, mm-hmm. you know, Chicago is notorious. You know, I cover a lot of the neighborhoods with my Neighborhood Eat segment. And we're neighborhood folks. Like, we like to stay in our neighborhood. You know, a lot of people don't leave the neighborhood because you can find everything in your particular neighborhood. So I always think it's a good thing if you can maybe think outside of maybe your world and what you experience mm-hmm. on a daily basis. And it gives a common understanding, too, that, wow, that the experience of living in Chicago is so vastly different depending on where you live and who you are and, you know, what color skin you have and
she
all
made
those things.
A great point there that I've heard from a lot of Chicago artists and all the way from Chance the Rapper down, who talked about having a high school experience where they had to traverse their own city. Mm-hmm. Meaning, you know, we're so used to just going to the neighborhood school, or if you live in a suburban area, maybe if you live close by, you just, you know, you go to that school. What Tonika's talking about is selective enrollment, where she lived in Inglewood and she would have to travel from Inglewood, which is in the heart of the south side of Chicago, to Lane Tech, which is up at Irving and Western on the heart of the north side of Chicago, to get there each day to be able to take public transportation or drive, whatever it might be. You have to go through several different neighborhoods and several different places. And because of that, you do see that the world is not confined to your block. It's a bigger world, and there are different perspectives.
Yeah, and God bless artists because, you know, whether they're doing it through music or visual arts or through projects, they really do help move the discussion in a way and maybe get to people's hearts that mm-hmm. maybe just a regular discussion wouldn't necessarily facilitate.
Absolutely. Chicago's very own, Tanika Johnson. Steve Cochran Show here. Justin Kaufman in for Steve, who is going to Prague. It's the Chicago Blackhawks on Friday kick off the season in Prague. How great is that against the Flyers? What a great experience, not just for Steve, but for fans and for the Chicago Blackhawks to have an experience to open up in Europe like that. It's amazing.
I really offered to go because Steve doesn't drink beer. Right. And really, you can't experience Prague without being a good, solid beer drinker.
It is the number one beer-consuming city in the world.
Is it really?
Yes, we did find that. In our preparation for this trip, we did learn that.
What's it, close second, Milwaukee?
I don't know, but Prague, it's big time there, and Steve doesn't drink.
And the other thing is Steve is on a diet, so it's not like he's going to be able to eat the goulash and all of the bacon goodies.
I did ask him if he was going to take his Seattle Sutton trays with him, and he said no, G.
Oh, okay.
I think he'll be eating there. Don't worry about it.
Oh, what a great experience. And again, very excited. Alex DeBrinkett's going to join us as for Breakfast with the Blackhawk coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, which is also exciting. I'm really excited because I think the Blackhawks had a great end to the season last year. And we talked about this, Dave. Just thinking about how the Blues went on and went all the way to the Stanley Cup, and you think about the fact that at one point in maybe March, the Blues could have been out of
earlier.
It.
January, they were below the Blackhawks.
Exactly,
the
and the Blackhawks were fighting for that last position, and that's all it takes is to get into that playoffs. And
just got
to
get in.
And in the Stanley Cup playoffs, it's like anything can happen.
Yeah, it's a big year. We had Doc Emmerich was on with us yesterday.
My favorite person.
Yes, because he acknowledged G. So she was like, wow, you know me?
I was like, thank you.
Doc's the best.
Yeah. Oh, but he was saying, hey, I asked him, I said, is this just what we're hearing in Chicago, or is this the perception around the league that the Blackhawks are a playoff caliber team now? And he said, yeah.
Yeah, so, they should be. I mean,
they should be.
When you look at the lineup, and they just put the roster out yesterday, but when you look at the lineup and the additions, and we're not talking about in the last couple of years because of salary cap. There have been a lot of going for players that maybe might be cheaper, and you hope that they have upside, but you don't know yet. But this time around, when you look at the moves they made this offseason, you're really talking about some high-level veterans that came out in the defense and others who have got quality resume when it comes to
that. And you look at guys who they picked up last year who contributed, like Dylan Strome.
Yeah, right.
They get a full year with him. You look at Andrew Shaw returning. You look at this time last year, we didn't know if Corey Crawford was going to play. Mm. Yeah, so now you not only have Corey Crawford, but you have another established NHL goaltender, Robin Leonard.
So, Dave, is this a dumb question? Is the salary cap only in hockey or other sports? No,
it's
have
all
it?
Sports.
All
yeah.
sports. Have
well,
it?
there are variations of okay. it in different sports. In baseball, it's the luxury tax. With
in baseball, they just pay so thing. Much money okay. for all these players. You get $200 million but over 7 years.
So it's contract. More extreme yeah. in hockey. Maybe?
Well, hockey has what's called a hard cap.
Oh, okay.
I mean, there are no exceptions, and you have to be within that number, under that number, and you also can't be too far below that number.
Sports 101 questions by G.
No, that's a good question. Is it a hard cap in the NFL? I know that it's not in baseball. Baseball, the big market teams have to pay more if they go over.
Oh.
But see, the thing about the NFL is they're able to get around it with guaranteed money and they
cutting
can
people before
stretch
their contracts
the money. Yeah, stretch. That's right, but stretch the money out over a certain length of time and take your cap hit year by year,
right.
which I guess happens too in hockey, but it's a hard cap in hockey. I mean, you get your number, the league gets their number, and they know this is where you got to be.
It blows my mind more than anything, G, that it is time for NHL hockey is back. That it's October 4th and it's back. That blows my mind to
and
think
basketball,
that.
And basketball, too.
Unbelievable.
The Bulls are practicing.
Yeah.
The Bulls don't start until a little bit later into October. I mean, they're starting to practice in the pregame stuff or the preseason stuff.
Preseason, but
hockey's my favorite sport to watch, so I'm excited that it's back.
It just reminds me. It just means that.
Well, that in tennis.
Winter
but.
Sports is beginning, which means also winter is coming.
Okay.
That's how I see
that
it.
That is
in my
a cheery
head.
Thought.
I don't think we're going to have a fall.
You know, we're still early in the football season. Let's That's keep true. That in mind.
All right, coming up, Heather Sharone's going to join us from the Daily Line. We'll talk about, of course, what to expect from this contract negotiation with CPS and Chicago Teachers Union, including some other stories. We'll ask her about what is happening with the mayor and her just very interesting story about the census. The mayor of Chicago is really putting a push and putting resources in to make sure that all people are counted in Chicago. And it's a political move because right now in Washington, the feeling is to restrict how the census is sort of played out. So it's interesting to see that the mayor is going in a different direction. We'll ask about any repercussions about that with Heather coming up after the headlines.
I think that the Chicago school board should be very nervous. And at a time when we in the wealthiest country in the history of the world have the highest rate of childhood poverty of almost any major country on earth, you are demanding, and I am demanding, a change in national priorities.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
There you go, Senator Sanders, who was in Chicago. Geez, now it's been a couple weeks, but Senator Sanders, who did a rally with the Chicago Teachers Union. The Chicago Teachers Union and Chicago Public Schools have yet to come to a contract agreement, and that means today a closed-door meeting with Chicago Teachers Union delegates on essentially when a strike date would happen. Heather Sharone is a managing editor at the Daily Line. She also does the newsletter, the Daily Line newsletter, which is a must-read every morning. Heather, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here, Justin.
So today's a big day because this is a day where delegates get together and they set a date for a strike.
That's right. So the rubber is really going to meet the road. Mayor Lori Lightfoot will be put on notice. Either you come to an agreement with us by this date or we're walking off the job. And the earliest they could do that would be Monday. So that is going to be a very long weekend, I imagine, for a lot of people.
You know, there's talk about, you know, trying to figure out exactly when that date would be, Columbus Day, and you, like you said, maybe Monday. But how important is just the symbolism of setting a date? Do you think that that would light a fire under the negotiations from both the CTU and CPS?
Well, absolutely. If you look back at 2012, when there was a seven-day strike during Mayor Rahm Emanuel's first term, and then again in 2016, negotiations went all the way up to midnight. In 2012, they couldn't reach an agreement, but in 2016, I believe it was 11:45 when we got the news that they had an agreement and to stay put and that they'd be coming out to talk to us pretty soon. So, you know, I've always thought that if there was going to be a deal to avert a strike, it was going to happen at the last minute because, you know, you never really want to do it until you have to do it. And none of these are easy issues to resolve.
Exactly. And Heather, this is such an interesting, more existential debate than one just about money and benefits. The CPS seems to want to make it about that. They've floated the idea of 16% raise over 5 years. They've really kind of pushed to the Chicago taxpayer that, hey, we're giving Chicago teachers one of the best deals of any teachers in the entire country.
We were talking about that during the commercial break, and I said, wow, it sounds like they're getting a really good deal. Right. You know, in 5 years, they're going to be to the six-figure mark.
Right.
Like,
but
good.
Heather, right? The point is here that it's not about money.
Right. And it's not necessarily about money for teachers as much as it is for paraprofessionals and other support staff that work in all of the schools. The teachers also feel like they took significant pay cuts during the last decade or so under Rahm Emanuel, and that they deserve that pay raise. So it's not so much of a sort of a bonus, but simply what they deserve. And also, they are determined to write agreements into the contract to hire more nurses, social workers, librarians, which have really been cut from a lot of schools as the school district faced. Really, you want to talk about existential, it was on the verge of bankruptcy a couple of years ago. And that's where a lot of the cuts were made. So the teachers union sees this contract as a way to reverse those cuts and really to hold Mayor Lori Lightfoot's feet to the fire for her campaign promises.
Yeah, she did campaign, right.
Right. She promised to restore these cuts. She promised to prioritize neighborhood schools over selective enrollment schools. And that's, you know, that's really sort of the heart of the agreement. But you're right. It's not so much a, well, we want, you know, X amount more, or we want X amount health care benefits. It's really sort of a debate over how the school district should be run. Now, Lori Lightfoot says, look, I agree with you. We need more nurses. We need more social workers. But we can't write that into the contract because these are really hard jobs to fill. There's a very tight labor market. And if you put these contracts, your promises in the contract and we can't fill them, that's going to create a huge problem.
Yeah. And Heather, that's interesting. And I think a lot of listeners out there and people need to understand that the promise of more social workers, nurses, less class sizes, it's all been promised before. And that's something that the union is trying to harp on, that these were handshake deals with the Emanuel administration, even with the Daley administration before that. And so for Mayor Lightfoot to come forward and say, let's just do a handshake deal and not put it in writing, they don't trust that. And they don't trust it, not necessarily personal with Mayor Lightfoot, but they've been burned before.
They certainly have been burned before, but I think it's a little bit personal with Mayor Lightfoot, actually. You know, they endorsed Tony Preckwinkle very early in the mayoral election over Lori Lightfoot. They campaigned vehemently as a union for Tony Preckwinkle, and I think it was a blow to sort of the political power, the clout, as we like to say in Chicago, of the teachers union that Tony Preckwinkle only won about 25% of the vote. So the teachers union definitely sees, you know, this is sort of a place where they've got to make a stand to make sure Lori Lightfoot knows that, you know, they're still a force to be reckoned with.
Well, I think everybody agrees that the work of, I mean, you don't become a teacher to make a lot of money. I mean, and nobody deserves to have the resources they need, especially when they're taking care of our children and the next generation and educating young minds. But where do you see this going, Heather? Like, how do you feel like this is going to play out?
Well, I think it's would always be a mistake to underestimate the support that the teachers have from parents. I have kids, and I know that I am grateful that they go away for 8 hours a day and they get, you know, taken care of and treated well. So I think that really it will come down to, you know, where do the parents end up? And that's really what's going to determine the outcome of the strike. We're also dealing in a totally different political world than we were back in 2012. Mayor Lightfoot, by all polling, is significantly popular. She won every ward in the last election. So, you know, she is certainly a political force to be reckoned with. But the two sides appear to be very far apart on, like Justin said, existential issues about how the Chicago schools should be run.
Strikes are always about the narrative. And it's as you see, the Chicago CPS, Chicago Public Schools, has put out a website to set, to show Chicagoans exactly what they offer. They're saying it's under transparency. The union got mad about that and said, if you want to be transparent, why don't we live stream the bargaining sessions? Because what should, and what should we take away from that, Heather? Does that tell us that what CPS is saying on their websites or what their narrative is may be different behind closed doors?
That it's necessarily different, but you can certainly emphasize different statistics to make different points. And I think that that's what they're doing. And you know, the teachers union has said, you know, we've been clear what we want. You want a deal? Put these, you know, hiring agreements in the contract. Whereas the city's saying, look, it's a little bit more complicated than that. Here's what we've offered. Here's what teachers would make. And, you know, let's not disrupt, you know, families' lives, really, over something that we all agree on.
All right, let's get to some of the nitty-gritty politics stuff that's happening. First, Mayor Lightfoot and former Alderman John Arena. John Arena, this just came out that, he got a job in the planning department. He lost his bid for re-election in April. This is an interesting story because the mayor was in front of our television sets and did a primetime speech about a massive budget hole and hiring freezes, and we're gonna hunker down. Yet then you see kind of the same old story where political allies get special treatment.
Yeah, it's a little bit awkward, but Mayor Lori Lightfoot yesterday defended her decision to hire John Arena vociferously. She said he, you know, has the right skill set and that the new planning commissioner, who the city council will is expected to confirm later this month, he's coming from Detroit. Maurice Cox has never lived in Chicago, and he's going to meet people around him who understand the city and understand the challenges, and that is part of the role that John Arena will play. What's interesting, though, is that several aldermen urged Lori Lightfoot not to hire John Arena, and there is a significant amount of bad blood between John Arena and several aldermen, and that's going to make, I think, his job difficult, as well as, you know, keeping this as a continuing potential problem.
Is that from just, bad blood? Is that bad blood from when they were in council together, where he was part of the Progressive Caucus, and they just are like, we're done with this dude?
Well, you know, they clashed really. So Jim Gardner defeated John Arena in February. So, you know, there wasn't a lot of love between them during that campaign. And another alderman, Anthony Napolitano, who represents the far northwest side's 41st ward, he clashed with John Arena over plans for affordable housing.
Yeah. And then you're seeing how that playing out in Jefferson Park, even today, as you see Alderman Gardner's changing plans on the Six Corners deal. All right. I think that's a fascinating. That's one of those nuts and bolts Chicago stories that's just perfect.
The drama.
The idea of the alderman getting a deal. I love the way that the mayor just kind of shut it down. And I also love how she told these Northwest Side aldermen, worry about your own wards. There's something great about that. The way that sometimes I don't know if it's the unfiltered or uncensored Mayor Lightfoot, but when she does get into that mode, she can be very effective.
Well, we've seen it several times, and she's not been afraid to take on her enemies in public. She's, you know, she very famously called a member of the Fraternal Order of Police a clown on a hot mic during a city council meeting. She apologized, but said only, "I'm sorry, I said that out loud."
I'm sorry, it was heard.
See, I don't mind it because I feel like you know, if it was a man doing this, I don't think it would be something that we would be talking about as much. So I love that she's.
I mean, Yeah. Let's think about Rahm Emanuel.
Exactly.
He's famous for sending a dead fish to a political opponent. I mean, come on right?
Now, final thing we'll talk about just is the census, because one of Mayor Lightfoot's political opponents, who she's not shy in belt bashing online, of course, is the president of the United States and Donald Trump. But there seems to be, with this push to put as many resources as possible into the census count, a sort of a strong rebuke to what the White House and what the administration wants to do.
That's right. So yesterday, Mayor Lightfoot announced that she was going to ask the city council to spend $2.7 million to ensure that every Chicagoan gets counted as part of the census, which kicks off 6 months from yesterday. And the idea is that Chicago has a large immigrant population, a large poor population, and large college student population. And those are the people that are hardest to count in the census. And Chicago gets roughly $1,400 for every person who gets counted as a city resident. So there's a lot of money at stake for a decade. So the mayor said, look, I know you're scared because the president has made no bones about wanting to use government information to find and deport undocumented immigrants. And she said yesterday, look, I understand you're scared, but if you want to fight back against the president, this is the way to do it. You can't let him push you into the shadows, and we as a city are going to do everything we can to address your fears and do what we can to make you feel comfortable. But that the benefits of being counted in the census far outweigh the drawback.
Yeah. Heather Sharone is the managing editor at The Daily Line. You can find all of her work online and, of course, sign up for The Daily Line newsletter, which comes out every morning, a must-read. Heather, thanks for joining us.
Anytime. Thanks, Justin.
There you go. Heather Sharone. I love when she comes on the program, and she's a fixture on Extension 720 as well. Always great insight from a great political reporter in Chicago.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Get up off of that thing and dance to you.
Steve Cochran Show. Justin Kaufman in for Steve, who's ready to head to Prague with the Blackhawks, who play on Friday.
Well, they're already there.
They're already there.
Yeah.
Steve's on his way. They're waiting for Steve. They're getting all the preparations
for when
Steve
arrives.
Steve also has a long list of souvenir items that we've requested, among which is a bag full of loose garnets.
I thought it was granite.
Garnets.
Oh, garnets.
Why would loose all the ladies
granite?
Granite?
I didn't understand why you guys were so excited about granite.
Prague is just the real garnets. You get really good granite in Prague, right?
Yes.
And garnet is my birthstone.
Oh,
so
for Mary.
Oh,
in January.
Yeah. So he said he was going to bring us all back something. But because, you know, he's got something to live up to, because when Dave went to Italy, you brought back beautiful gifts for everyone. I wasn't on the team then, so I didn't get anything, but I saw you gift everyone.
Yeah.
It was really nice.
I got my wine stopper. I love it.
I think when you came back from Norway, it was just, there was like whale jerky.
Oh, whale jerky. Yeah, I brought back whale jerky.
Really?
Yeah.
You killed a whale, Dave?
It wasn't just, there was elk. What else was in there? I didn't kill them.
Oh.
They were already being sold.
What a cute whale.
That's part of the trip. The part of the trip was you harpoon a whale, and then you dry it out. You do the jerky, and then you bring it back for coworkers.
I want to be Dave Ennett. I want to travel the world. Go to Norway, Italy.
Got another one coming. Details.
Where?
Details soon.
Ooh. Cliffhanger.
Tease.
There you go.
Oh, my goodness.
It's a professional.
Not a Walk of Famer for nothing, buddy.
I am jelly. I can't even tell you.
Maybe you'll come.
Ooh.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Yes.
There you go.
Gotta pay.
You gotta pay. But yeah. But that's awesome. All right. So we'll find out more about that. Dave Ennett giving us the professional radio tease. Coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, Dean Richards is coming up right after the news. And at 8:40, Greg Flamm back in the building for the swap meet, 312-981-7200.
I don't know much about the swap meet. I'm excited.
So fun.
So like, it's really cool. So people, but how does he judge it because he can't see it?
A lot of times he's good at getting the descriptions, and he's been so experienced in getting all
of
this.
So you can tell him the markings and he knows?
Yep, he knows it all. And it's it's really just what you want to brag about.
Oh.
The cool collectible that you have, that you collected at some point in your life that you want to brag about.
I don't think I have one cool collectible.
You got a little bit of time to think about it.
Huh.
All right, we'll take a break and then we'll get to the news. Stay with us.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey, you know I love you more than one. Yeah, Hollywood.
Cochran Show here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in for Steve this week. Joining us now, Dean Richards, as he does. What's up, buddy?
Who's back on the morning show?
How are you? Good to talk to you.
What's going on, buddy boy?
So it's always awesome to be able to talk with Dean Richards, a Walk of Famer himself, Silver Circle Award winner.
I have on good authority that all of the construction debris on my Walk of Fame star over at that old dump where we used to be, is magnificent. People, tourist buses come by just to look at the piles of debris.
It's the star tours.
That is scattered on our Walk of Fame stars outside the soon-to-be million-dollar condos that were our offices.
That's a good thing. If they're able to keep that Walk of Fame, when the luxurious condos come in, then just think about how much more value your Walk of Fame star becomes.
I guess so.
You could sell it later. It's just like the real estate market.
I've been pushing. If that would be nice if it stayed there, but if not, I've been pushing for it to go to Lower Wacker.
That's a good spot.
People. There are plenty of people who sleep down there.
Yeah,
and be comforted. Throw banana peels on it.
Banana peels and all kinds of debris.
Starbucks lids.
Yeah, that's the least of
I was going to say, Mary, you've created a utopia down at Lower Wacker. That's
seen
what you think
all.
Is being thrown out of
there. I don't know what Lower Wacker she sees, but
a little different.
Well, they fall from above, the upper level.
Okay. A little icky from my perspective.
Since there are three of us here who have a stake in this, can we vote Mary, Dean, and
We should have a committee.
Should. Yeah.
You guys should put it on the Riverwalk. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, that does make sense.
Yeah, that'd be nice. And people would get to see it, and visitors. I like that.
Okay, let's do
this.
It.
Is like, when you
right
think
down
about
below
that,
us.
That there are three Walk of Famers on this program. It makes you think you guys are like the 80s San Francisco 49ers. Like, you've got the Hall of Famers.
I thought you were going to say we're like in our 80s.
No.
Justin, it's hard. It's hard to be with all three of these.
They're still playing, too.
Not a lot of room in this room with all of our Walk of Fame egos.
It's tough. It's not easy.
Is Bertrand here yet?
I know my life has changed significantly ever since the plaque went down. Right. And if by chance they don't keep them at Tribune or, put them someplace, I would like to put mine on a giant gold chain that I can wear around my neck, like Flava Flav.
It only weighs 35 pounds.
That's okay. I think it's good for my core. Walk
for
around with
muscles.
Something like that around my neck.
We're going to have to dip it in like 24-karat gold first.
Yeah, there's a whole thing
here. Get the cigarette butts off of it.
Well, maybe you could wear it as a necklace when you're on the red carpet for The Joker. The Joker is the big movie that's coming out this week. You've seen it, but the premiere is in New York. This movie's gone from expectation and everybody excited to a little bit of trepidation about what comes with it.
Yeah, more than just trepidation about this. Full-blown controversy, which you could say is bad for this film. I would argue that you cannot buy this kind of publicity for a motion picture, and while Warner Brothers Pictures is not saying so, I'm guessing that they love all the controversy about this film.
Good point.
And the the concerns that law enforcement officials have where this movie is going to open on Friday. The actual premiere of the movie was in Los Angeles this past Saturday on Hollywood Boulevard at the Chinese Theater. Now, this was very interesting because they had invited all the press, all the usuals to show up with this and stand on the red carpet and ask, the stars walk by and you ask them questions about the movie at the last minute because of the controversy surrounding this movie and the fear that it might incite violence. Warner Brothers Pictures disinvited the press to come to the world premiere because they didn't want anyone asking the stars about the controversy surrounding the film. Joaquin Phoenix, who is brilliant in this movie, by the way, as the Joker. It's really an incredible movie. I will say that. I do have some reservations I'll tell you about in a second. But Joaquin Phoenix, in some interviews that had already taken place, a reporter from London asked him, did he have any concerns that this movie might incite violence, that copycats might look at this movie? Because, it's a, I guess you would call it a prequel to Batman. Batman's not in the movie, but it's the story about how the famous villain Joker came to be. He is a very deranged, mentally disturbed person who uses gun violence as a means to resolve conflict.
Right.
So, you know, people are so concerned with the ridiculous amount of shootings that we've had in public places, in schools, in churches. I think the anniversary for the Las Vegas shooting is either today or yesterday. All of these public shootings that people are concerned that people will look at this movie, deranged people will look at this movie and, you know, see it as something to copycat. That's what people are concerned with. So the reporter asked Joaquin Phoenix about this, and instead of having, I cannot believe that they didn't think somebody would ask this question, but the Joaquin wasn't prepared. And the way he responded was by getting out of the chair and walking out of the interview.
Come on.
Wow.
Which is, you know, it's his prerogative to do that. No one says you got to talk to the stupid entertainment press. But when somebody asks you a challenging question.
That's not crazy of a question.
All you got to do is have a one-sentence response.
Yeah. Nah, I haven't thought about that.
That's all you got to do.
Right. So they'll leave that for the suits next. Right?
I mean, Warner Brothers prepared a statement saying, you know, we didn't make this movie with the intention of inciting violence. Well, really, you didn't do that.
What's amazing about it, Dean, and you'll have your review for it, and we'll talk more about that as the week unfolds. But most of the superhero movies we know and love, they're fantastical, meaning they're in different planets, or maybe they're set here, but it's a different time, mm-hmm. or it's aliens like the Marvel universe. In this case, they're really going for a realistic portrayal of how the Joker started. That's where this is not Batman. This is not your standard DC or Marvel fare.
This is not comic book violence. This is not people vaporizing, mm-hmm. you know, like Avengers or even, you know, like cowboys and Indians. This is, I mean, I think terrible timing for a movie like this in the atmosphere in which we're living right now, where public shootings and deranged people are shooting up innocent people. That's kind of what the plot line of this movie. It's eerily similar. Now, I'm not sure. I saw the movie last night. As I said, I'll give you a full review on Friday, but I am going to give it a Dean's List A. It's a remarkable piece of movie making. Joaquin Phoenix's performance, some people are saying it's typecasting, that he's a little off anyway, so really just playing himself in this movie. But he does a remarkable job in the movie. But it is very disturbing to watch all of the gun violence that's going on in this movie. I'm not sure people are going to watch this and go, oh, I have to go kill somebody. But it does validate gun violence. The way that it resolves itself in the movie, the way that it's presented, I don't want to give away too much about the movie nor the ending of this movie, it definitely validates gun violence as a resolution to conflict. And so that's a little bit, that's a little bit disturbing for me.
Dean Richards, our guest here, more on entertainment. We'll take a quick break and get to some other entertainment stories. And like Dean just said, we'll have more on the Joker and the review coming up here on Friday.
You'll be calling his name, oh, 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 oh. Dean Richards, the entertainment editor, Channel 9720.
All right, Dean Richards here. More on entertainment. Let's get through a list of other stories that are in Hollywood today. Justin Timberlake accosted on the red carpet. We saw this. This is strange. It looked like a fan that was excited and just got a little too touchy.
It got so weird. It was actually in Paris. The Louis Vuitton fashion show, which is where Steve really is. Everyone is saying that he's in Prague, but everybody, if you know Steve and if you've ever seen the clutch that he carries around, he loves his Louis Vuitton. And Justin Timberlake and his wife Jessica Biel were getting out of a car to walk the red carpet to go to the show, and a guy lunges out of the crowd and grabs onto Justin Timberlake's leg. And, tries to hold on. His security people are right behind him. They separate them, take the guy away. Timberlake and his wife are unharmed and practically unfazed by it all. Just walk off. Here's the really weird part of this whole thing. The guy who did this does this all the time. His name is Vitaly Seduk. He has accosted Brad Pitt, Leonardo DiCaprio. He kissed Will Smith. He lunged onto Bradley Cooper. He put his head up the dress of America Ferrara. He ran onto the stage of the Grammy broadcast. You would think that this guy's picture would be
right.
ingrained in the memory.
You bounce one check at the corner store, and they got your picture right behind the counter. This guy.
How does this guy keep getting into stuff? You know, and close to the red carpets, it's amazing. But somehow he does, and he has struck again. He's I don't know if he's in jail or in police custody or where he is right now, but it's scary.
Yeah, have you ever gotten the rock?
It's no, I don't think so.
Yeah, because that would go poorly. You know,
yeah,
what I'm saying?
That would not go well. With Will Smith, kind of shook his lights a little bit. You know, you play Muhammad Ali, and you know, you're going to have some skills when you come out of something like that.
Ugh.
But this is like sort of to my point with the Joker movie. People do crazy things.
Yeah,
and you know, what are you going to do?
Seems like this guy's stock and trade is crazy.
I just
things.
Love how calm JT was during the whole thing. They were just like, oh boy, like.
But I think, gee, you would be calm as well if you knew you had four bodyguards who are about to save you.
Oh yeah, good point.
That's probably they're so used to it at this point where they're like, it's going to take 10 seconds for my guy Rudy to come over here and break some legs.
I wonder what I mean, what would you do if somebody, you're walking along and somebody lunges at you and grabs your leg like that? What would you do?
What would you do? It's a good text question. What would you do if someone lunged at your legs? All right, let's keep going here. We saw Demi Lovato got baptized in Israel. Beyonce's father, breast cancer.
Yeah, breast cancer. We don't know the degree of severity of his condition, nor how he is, but he did reveal yesterday that he has breast cancer. It's very rare for men to get breast cancer, but it does happen. And it happens generally with men between the ages of 60 and 70. He's 67 years old. So, you know, that's out there right now.
And the other, this story, it's surprising to see that Kylie Jenner and Travis Scott are separated.
I can't even believe I came into work today just with my grief over...
this is a big power couple. This is a big deal.
This is a big deal. Kylie Jenner, Travis Scott have been together for a while. They have a one-year-old daughter, but according to sources, they are not breaking up completely. They're not done, according to the source, but they're taking a break from each other right now. I'm on a break!
Is this like conscious uncoupling for just a little bit of time?
Ross and Rachel. They say that there are still trust issues and the stress of their lifestyles does not make...
Talk about being lunged at. I mean, I would think Kylie Jenner and Travis Scott are lunged at, maybe not physically, but mentally, like all the time. Kylie Jenner can't do anything, right?
We know with all the other Jenners and Kardashians around them, I don't even know how anybody could lunge at them.
That's true. That's
just like four or five layers of family members.
Mostly just family members lunging, right?
Right.
And babies.
Yeah.
And babies.
Yeah, there's a ton of them.
Lots of funny named babies, right?
All right, so our final story, Will Smith, as you mentioned just earlier, he's got a clothing line. So Will, maybe acting, hanging it up and getting into fashion? What's he doing?
Yeah, no, he's definitely not getting rid of acting. But, hey, a little sideline never hurt anyone. He is launching, you know, the former Fresh Prince of Bel-Air has launched a clothing and accessory line called Bel-Air Athletics that will be shirts and socks and track suits. All inspired by Will Smith's old TV show.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's perfect. I'm in. Just show me where to go. I'm in. I want to dress like Uncle Phil.
I was thinking of you more like Carlton.
Yeah,
but,
sure, I'll take both.
It's a line of sporting goods what it looks like. It'll be available starting October 14th.
All right. Dean Richards, check him out every morning on WGN Morning News. And, of course, here 8 o'clock every morning on the Steve Cochran Show. Dean, good to talk to you.
See you tomorrow.
Thanks, Dean.
Bye, guys.
No break. All right. All right, so yeah, how about that?
Yeah,
always fun.
Yeah, what, you really want to dress like Uncle Phil?
There's the best not to give away my sensibilities, but I do like a J. Cole. But he has the first line in one of his great songs. He says, first things first, rest in peace, Uncle Phil.
I know.
I just love that line. But yeah, I'd be an Uncle Phil guy. He's got good suits. You know, he's always a judge. You know, he's just always had the gray suit on.
But I like how Dean said you're more of a Carlton.
Yeah. Dave Ennett, do you have a favorite Fresh Prince of Bel Air character?
Is not, that, I, you, honestly, that you stayed, not, that stayed with not, you? It was not one of my big shows. Sorry.
I would be. What about you, Gene? Do you have a character that you resonate to? Because when you do watch that show, I don't want to get into praising that program because it was really good.
Mm-hmm.
But Will Smith is outstanding in that program.
Oh, right? I loved it. It was like, I remember that was what you went home and watched. Yeah.
When you watch reruns of Fresh Prince of Bel Air, and you see Will Smith doing what he does, he is a full blown star. He's on there. He is making people laugh. He is the go-to. The focus of the scene is on him. Everybody else is in support.
He's just this like skinny little kid. And then
explosive.
I know. And now he's like a superstar.
Well, yeah. And Carlton, no slouch himself. He does. He's big in our family, mm-hmm, because he hosts America's Funniest Videos.
I actually have met Alfonso. And
what?
He's a very nice man.
Yeah. Nice.
And he's not somebody that doesn't want to talk about having been Carlton. Because, sometimes actors don't like to talk about what actually they're really known for.
Yeah.
But
he references Carlton a lot on ABF.
Okay.
Or AFB.
Can you back up for a second? So he's big in your family because he hosts America's Funniest Videos.
Yep.
Somebody really still watching
that's
that show?
Still on?
Yes, it is. It's on ABC on Sundays at 6, and we sit down and watch this. Hilarious. It's a great family program.
Do you watch Cats Fall Off a Table?
I mean, you can watch that a million times.
That's what it always is. Any cat falling off a table is delicious.
Mary, after the show, we're just going to turn Instagram on, and we'll sit down in the Cochrane office, and I'll show you hours and hours of cats falling off tables.
What about all the people who put their kids up to stuff where they fall and everybody's laughing? I mean, it's like, it's mean spirited.
I love the ethical dilemma that America's Funniest Videos caused in this program.
Or
this
guys
morning.
Injuring their you-know-whats. It's constant.
All right, coming up, 312-981-7200 to Swap Meet. Greg Flamm in the building. Do you want to talk about your collectibles, the stuff that you've acquired, the junk that you've kept in the garage? Now's the time to do it. Greg Flamm will be in studio. He is our picker. At DuPage Picker is his handle. 312-981-7200. Line it up now. Steve Cochran Show here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman filling in for Steve today. The gang is all here. 312-981-7200. When you hear that music, it's time for Greg Flamm. Greg, of course, the man who is DuPage Picker on both Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And he is the man that brings us the swap meet. Greg Flamm, great to see you, buddy.
Great
Thanks
be
for
back.
Being here. It's been so long.
I know. July 4th, I think we did one.
Yeah. That's the last time we did it?
But that's all right. It's busy season. It was prime season for me of garage sales. So cleaned up, did well, and looking forward to
it. How has the summer been when you're talking about estate sales, garage sales, things like that?
Garage sales, it was great. Selling at the flea market, not so good. The last 4 out of 5 Sundays, as you know, we've had rain like in the morning.
Yeah,
so
right. That affects you guys.
Yeah, I haven't been able to sell as much at the flea market, but I'm doing well on eBay and everywhere else. So
well, this good. Segment, which is always a fan favorite, really is just about evaluating your collectibles, your memorabilia, the junk that you've taken from house to house.
I'm
that you're like, I just can't
excited
throw
about
it out.
This. I've never experienced this before. And I am somebody that's notorious for throwing things away without really evaluating or,
you're helping
assessing.
Greg's career. Yeah.
Right. Yes.
Well, as Justin knows, I always like to preface the segment with everyone reads those articles of, like, this week it was a woman found a Rolex in her couch. And it was, worth tens of thousands of dollars. I always like to come in with stuff that people have in their house. Like, you can go in your garage, basement, attic, and you can find a lot of these things. So I try to be more practical.
Yeah. You bring things in. That's the important thing.
Just kind of look for it. And I'm more of a ephemera paper guy, so that's what I really enjoy selling. Plus, it doesn't take up much room, when you're storing it.
Does that mean you collect papers? Comic books?
Well, when you say that, people always hit me up for, hey, I got a bunch of National Geographics, or I got a bunch of time, and that doesn't work for me. I like stuff like this, like slides from the stockyard.
Yeah, what is this here?
Yeah, these are from the 60s. They're Technicolor slides, four-pack. And they're of the stockyards, and you can see them in the light. And I'll let Dave see that.
I have never seen anything that looks like that ever.
And then I have
in my
the
life.
Super Bowl 20 official program, and then I have.
Of course, that's a classic.
Right.
Every good Chicago.
Yeah, and this is like
has that.
This is bread and butter. I could sell these
Super
every time
excited.
I get one. I sell for like 17 to 25, depending on the condition.
Yeah, Super Joe is excited about that one right there.
Yeah, I do have one of those.
And there's
they
a lot
for
of them.
How much? Because I have one at home.
In that condition, probably about $17. You probably have signatures on yours, right, Dave?
I don't.
You should get a couple.
I was working.
I have an Axle roller rink decal, and they're collectible among
what is that?
Roller
rinks. Okay, so decal.
Yeah, so people would put these on their roller skate cases, and you know every roller rink, and plus roller rinks would trade them with other roller rinks. So this
is a sticker,
and it's a sticker unused. Okay. It's from the Axle roller rink. They had Norridge, Niles, Countryside. I guess they had three locations. But this is like a $40.
Yeah,
item,
look at that.
You know, on
that's
eBay.
$40.
So, yeah, that's $40.
But who determines that's $40?
Just the market online.
Oh.
If there's another one or how
capitalism,
many,
how many,
yeah,
gotcha.
And I always say eBay is a great. You learn the marketplace. You learn supply and demand, you know, really fast selling there. And then I have a funny item. These are called Heads Up Baseball Stars, and they were put out by Topps. And I have the Ryan Sandberg one.
Oh, yeah, classic.
But on the back, they had a list of who was in it. And I think Ken Griffey was on it.
And it's not just a little cardboard cutout. It's a little suction
cup. It's a suction cup that you can put it up wherever you want. But
they make everything for baseball.
So, Greg, when you find these things at garage sales, do you like, and you probably know all the people that go to them like you do, the collector. Do you guys like chase to the item?
Are you competitive or are you
a
community?
How does
that go? Yeah, it's a lot of times you're playing leapfrog at the garage sales. Like your competitor will be ahead of you and you'll see that and you're like, oh,
it's like a scavenger hunt.
I'm going to drive a few blocks up and you know skip, you know, because he's probably been to the one you're going
to. Wait a minute, though, Greg. Do you have one nemesis in particular?
Yeah.
This could be a really good reality show.
If I could, I have a great story. We were in line at an estate sale. I think there was about 25 people in line. And the people running the estate sale were putting out garbage that had gotten wet in the rain out onto the curb. And 15, 20 people in line, okay, for the estate sale. I get out of my car. I look at the pile of garbage, and I saw an empty video game box on the pile of garbage. I grabbed that, and no one else thought to take that. And I sold that empty box for $86.
An empty box.
Empty wet box, mind you. It was all
what
wet.
Was on the
I
cover?
Let it dry
what
out.
Was
it was NEC, a video game. I can't remember the actual system. But I had sold the system before, and I knew it was worth money. And I saw the box, and I was like, even if there's nothing in there, I'll probably get $30 for the box. It got bit up to $86.
See, I am not up for this. I admire
it. It's an eye. It's a muscle you got to exercise.
I admire you because even going to like, you know, having to dig through like the TJ Maxx sometimes can be challenging.
And there's people that do that. You know, there's retail arbitrage. People go to Walmart, you know, Target, and they'll scan and scan.
Are you taking on apprentices?
I teach people all the time, and I don't even charge them. I'll trade them something.
I've never heard Mary more excited than this segment.
I love Mary. She's always involved in
this segment. I love going to flea markets and garage sales. I'm crazy.
How about this? Mary, you can help on this. We'll take calls now. 312-981-7200. We got text as well. The best item today, and best meaning interpretive, we judge and say that's the coolest item, is going to get you a pizza. How about that? We'll give away a Lou Malnati's pizza. 312-981-7200. This heads up, these baseball suction cups are hilarious because there are only 24 of them.
Right.
And they'll be like Tony Gwynn, Doc Gooden, Dennis Eckersley, Ken Griffey Jr. And then the last two are Dwight Smith and Jerome Walton, which were the rookies for the Cubs in 1989 that didn't really materialize to anything else after, but it's funny that they're on the list as well.
And I was excited when I found like a stack of those. I thought they'd be all different, but they were all Ryan Sandberg. And they were all open like that too.
All right, before we go, just to wet the whistle, 847 says, I have about 150 Beanie Babies, including some that were supposedly limited edition. I know this is really your axe to grind on Beanie Babies.
Yeah, you know, it's really a needle in a haystack with those. You really have to, you know, what most people list them by now are how many errors they have, like meaning some will have a double space in the paragraph. When you open the little heart for the Beanie Baby, there'll be an extra space, or there'll be an extra space where the exclamation went. I mean, there's all these different errors that the pros kind of know, and they list that way, and then those are the ones that might get $100, $200.
So really the ones that the
some
aberrations,
have sold for
the
thousands
anomalies
still,
thing.
But it's very rare. They're very... needle in the haystack.
Yeah, worth nothing.
I avoid them like the plague.
Well, the texts and the phone calls are coming in. We'll take a break here so we can get them lined up. 312-981-7200. It's a swap meet with Greg Flamm. We're about to evaluate all your collectibles, your memorabilia, and your junk. 312-981-7200. It's a swap meet here on the Steve Cochran Show. 312-981-7200. If you got something you'd like to brag about and you think it's worthwhile, collectibles, memorabilia, junk, Now's the time to text in or call, and the best one's going to get a pizza this morning. Also, you get Greg's expert advice, Greg Flam, of course, at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Let's go to the phones. Let's start with Richard, who's in his car right now. Richard, welcome to Swap Me. What do you want to brag about?
Well, I got some old Beta Magic the Gathering cards.
Nice.
And always looking for other cards, and if you know, is eBay or marketplaces good to buy those and sell those?
Marketplace is great to buy them. eBay would be a better place to sell them. And if you think you have something really nice or rare, you might want to get it graded, and they'll put, you know, they'll seal it in what they call a slab. And then you might get even more money for it. But you have to weigh out, is it worth getting graded? Because they charge like $35 or something to get it graded.
Yeah, how much does a Magic the Gathering card go for?
Right, well, some can be, $1,000, maybe more. Same thing with Pokemon cards. There's some Pokemon cards, 90s and 2000s, that are hundreds and even into the thousands.
Right.
You just got to research each card, and that's the hard part.
All right, thanks, Richard. Let's go to Janine. Janine is in Crystal Lake. Janine, what do you want to brag about?
I have comic books in plastic sleeves from the 1960s. The Marvel, Spider-Man, Batman, Wonder Woman.
Nice. Where'd you get them?
So my mother-in-law collected them, and we're not sure where to take them or what to do with them. We also have over 10,000 baseball cards.
Wow.
And Michael Jordan, from his movie, they had created these, I don't know what they are, but they're not pictures, but like a glyph of him on a thick, solid black frame.
As far as, when you say his movie, you mean Space Jam?
Yeah,
classic.
They call those cells, the pictures, and that, it depends what the picture is of, or makes the value fluctuate. As far as the comics, the grading is very, very strict on those. So if there's even any kind of a crease or a dog ear on the corner.
Any drool.
Yeah, there's all that. And then as far as the baseball cards, it's really, I'm assuming if they came from your mom, they're probably pre-80, 85, and that's really kind of the era you want to be.
We've talked about this,
80.
Right, because the Tops went into that mold where they made so many in the 80s that they're not worth
it. Just devalued them, yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Jeannie. All right, let's keep going. Let's go to Warren. Warren is in Lombard. Warren, what do you want to brag about?
I've got a golf card signed by Jesse Owens to my mother.
How did that happen?
My dad got it somewhere. I thought it was in down here in Woodridge, but I'm looking at the card, and it's Winnowick in St. Joe, Michigan, which is no longer in existence.
So Jesse Owens, the Olympic star, is golfing. That's
and what you do after you win a bunch of gold medals, you're like, yeah, let me hit the links. Right. Well, obviously a golf card I can't tell you, but his signature is very sought after, and some items that are certified can, I'm seeing some of his signatures almost $1,000.
Wow.
It depends what he signed. If it's just a piece of paper or is it an actual photo, things like that you have to consider.
Yeah.
If you wanted to shoot me a picture on the Facebook page, DuPage Picker, I'd be happy to do a little bit more research for you and I can get back to you.
I just think that's a cool one. I'd be framing that and putting in the vestibule.
Yeah, he's up there in the foyer. Not as high as Muhammad Ali's signature, but he's up there. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Warren. All right, there you go. Let's go to Kenya. Kenya is in Oswego. Kenya, what do you want to brag about?
I have a collection of Marshall Field's menus from the 30s, 40s, 50s.
Wow.
From all the rest. I worked for the restaurant division for 42 years.
Oh,
so
awesome.
I actually have 20 tubs of Marshall Field's collectibles.
Wow. Oh, that's amazing. You have 20 tubs? What's a tub? Like, what do you mean? Like, just these huge?
What other stuff you have in?
I have the Uncle Mistletoe and Aunt Holly costume.
Okay.
I have boxes. You name it, I have it. I collected everything starting with the clock when I first started working there in 1975.
Right.
And now I have, I've just accumulated so much stuff and getting to the point where, I love it, but I think I need to let some go.
Like, Kenya, now, are you collecting all that stuff when you knew that Marshall Field's was going out and it was going to become Macy's, or was this sort of every time you got something cool, you stashed it away?
The latter.
Yeah, 42 years, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Marshall Field stuff still does well. I can't tell you what a stack of menus would go for, but I have sold just empty boxes of Marshall Fields before. I've sold the ceramic clock, what was it, from the Mints, Frango.
Right.
That is a big one. If it's in great condition with the box, you could probably get $75 to $100 just for that container.
Kenny, what was the signature sandwich at Marshall Fields that they had down in that cafeteria?
Oh, yeah. The Field Special Sandwich?
Yeah.
Nice.
Is that on the menu?
That's still on the menu in the Walnut Room, yes.
Nice. There it is.
No, well, you definitely got some money there. Obviously, it takes time to list it and stuff like that. Again, if you want to contact me, I do sell on consignment as well, so maybe we could talk and I can help you out.
All right. Can you stay in the line? Stay in the line. She is the front runner right now for the pizza.
I would have to say that.
Right? Come on.
What are some...
Greg's eyes are lighting up.
Yeah, I love selling Marshall Field stuff.
Call me. Yeah. What are some of the tips you have if you're trying to sell something on eBay?
Do your due diligence. Do the research. You know, eBay has gotten harder and harder to sell on lately over the last 2 years. A lot of competition, obviously, with other companies coming up like Etsy and so forth, Bonanza, Mercari. So you really have to, you know, you can't just now take a photo and put five words up there and sell it. You really have to use your keywords, you know, smart. Just take a lot of pictures. You have to be honest. A lot of people look at them, oh, this is like brand new. No, it's not brand new. It's, you know.
Slightly used.
Wow. Be honest with
so it's
what
like
you're
a version
is.
Of a photoshopped picture on a dating site, kind of.
Yeah.
Just like Tinder.
Dating site
right.
For sure.
It's Tinder for collectibles.
Beware.
What about Marketplace? Facebook Marketplace.
Yeah.
I've sold things on there.
Yeah, it's you know, it's great because
I love it.
The fees aren't there, but you do have to meet up with people.
Yeah.
So it depends what you sell. If you're selling video games or iPhones, be very careful. Meet at a police station.
Make sure your husband's
really?
Home.
Yes,
that's
and
what
go with
say.
Someone else. I mean, we all know the story of the person, what was it, like Gary, Indiana? The guy, the father watched his son get shot over a PlayStation or a Microsoft Xbox or something.
Why?
Yeah, it was terrible. And he was with his dad meeting someone, and he still had a problem. So I recommend any high theft items like that, go to a police station and do your transaction.
There you go.
Oh, nice.
They're set up for that.
I want to think, I mean, it's amazing. The lines are lit up. The texts are coming in faster. There's at least 50 texts here that
it's
are
always,
stuck.
It's
and
always great.
Marshall Field lady, to me, wins the pizza.
Yeah, that was a good one.
I think so, too. Kenya, you're going to get a pizza, Lou Malnati's Pizza, for talking about your collection of Marshall Field's tubs. The tubs of 20 tubs
42
worth.
42 years of Marshall Field.
Greg Flam, you can find him at @DuPagePicker, both on Twitter and Facebook, and also Instagram.
Where and YouTube.
And YouTube.
Yep.
All that stuff. And the big announcement that you're returning to Extension 720 next Wednesday, 9 o'clock. We'll do the entire hour. So if you text in this morning or you called in and we didn't get to you, we're going to start that back up. Be a weekly segment. Wednesdays at 9 o'clock. You'll hear more about that coming up, but that'll be on Extension 720. Greg,
it's
thanks
awesome.
For coming down.
No problem.
And again, so much fun to do the swap
it's
meet
always
with you.
Fun. Thank you.
It was awesome.
Hey, Ma! Can we get some meatloaf?
Idly ho, neighborinos.
We need two big pizzas made. Everything on them.
Idly ho, neighbor.
Nobody messing in my neighborhood.
Hey, Ma! The meatloaf! We want it now! The meatloaf!
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
I'm Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran today. Hello, everybody watching on CLTV. G-Word Neighborhood Eats. This is a segment we do every Wednesday here on the program. And it's about something you've been doing with the Chicago Sun-Times for a couple of years.
Year plus. Yeah, this is... by the way, thanks, Super Joe. I love that music at the top of that.
So good.
I feel special.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, I go and visit a neighborhood fave. It could be something that's like an old school, like neighborhood favorite that's been around for, you know, decades, or it could be a place that just opened up that people need to know about. And I also go to the suburbs too, and I'm always open to suggestions. But the main thing is I don't go to chains and I don't go to places that have like huge, like, you know, under a big umbrella, restaurant ownership umbrella or hospitality group. I like to go to mom and pop shops, you know, I like to go to independent places that actually, you know, need the press, and people are so excited to talk about what they do. It's the American dream story.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
And of course, restaurants in Chicago are the small business du jour. But I'd ask, do you think about the neighborhood first, or you think about the mom and pop place first? Because you know you want to diversify and make sure everything's represented.
Yeah, I
try to go like to different locations. So like if I'm on north side one day, I'll try one week, I'll try to go south side the next week, or west, or, you know, it's hard. It's just me and I'm the person doing the research. But, you know, I try to go all over the city, and then sometimes I'll make it out to the suburbs too.
Now, I would assume through this program and your work at the Sun-Times that it is an onslaught of people going, gee, the place to go. You gotta go to here. If you're gonna be in this neighborhood, you gotta go here.
I do get that a lot, but the thing that what I think makes the Neighborhood Eat story special, and the cool thing is I do a whole video, so it's like, you know, use the same videos that I would do for TV is what lives on the Sun-Times website, and also we share it on the WGN radio website as well. And the cool thing is that you get to see the visual of it, but it's the story behind the people that make the food. And that's why I love restaurants so much. Yeah. It's not just about the delicious food. Yeah, that makes total sense. But it's about the passion and the story and the family behind the restaurant that's running it.
For years, I worked with Steve Dolinsky. I was his editor.
Yeah, former colleague of mine. Yeah.
And we would do radio pieces for restaurants. And I can't tell you how many times I've been in the kitchen where I put a microphone on a pan. And they throw the butter or oil in it, goes,
that sound. There's nothing like it.
It's just like, I wish there was, we wouldn't take pictures at the time because it's back in the 90s, but I'd be sitting there with my headphones on and a microphone and a pan.
But, you know, that's the thing. The sounds, the smells, it is the universal language that ties all culture and all people. And when you share a good meal, you break bread with somebody, you share a great glass of wine or, you know, a sweet tea or whatever it is that you like to drink, it is pretty remarkable because conversation starts flowing and you learn things about each other.
Now, today's, I mean, because the if you go to the Sun-Times, it's one of the more popular features on the website and in the paper. And today, as we're going to talk about right after the break here, this is really about pasta that's happening in Ukrainian Village.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I think technically it might be Wicker Park. Yeah, it's a little bit...
I've lost my hipster card.
No, it's okay. It's 1746 West Division, a little bit west of Ashland. And the great thing about this is I love to recommend places that are good for families and also good for, like, if you're going on a date. And it's a counter service, so it's casual. Yeah. So you're getting the same quality of pasta you might get in the Gold Coast that's artisanal and handmade, or the West Loop where you live, but you're not paying an exorbitant price for it. And you can actually go with the family and it won't break the bank. And you're getting something truly special that you would find in Italy.
The funny thing about this is I had no idea we were doing this today. Tortella's coming in studio this Saturday. My wife and I were going. Mm-hmm. We were going to go, and plans got changed up, and we ended up just ordering food in. But it was funny that was on our radar. That was something that my wife was like, we got to go try this place. People are talking about it, and we were going to go up there. So it's funny.
And the really cool thing is there's a giant glass pane in front. I mean, it's like from the ceiling to the floor, and the pasta makers are there making the pasta every day fresh, rolling it, cutting it, you know, shaping the pastas, and you can see it happen right in front of you.
We just did a story on Extension 720, it was Monday night, about 90s Wicker Park, and it was all about gentrification, and Kevin Koval was our guest, and we talked about his new book. But it was funny because my wife and I just walked up and down Division from Ashland and Damon. Uh-huh. Oh my Lord. I mean,
there's some old stays, like Phyllis's Musical Inn is
Phyllis
still
is there. Right.
Alliance Bakery is still there,
right.
And thank God,
place.
Let's hope they stay. And that, you know, everyone's favorite Rainbow Club is still there on that street.
Yeah,
but
right, Damon.
The nice part of this restaurant is that it's something that I feel like is good for families, and it's not something
it's a good addition.
Yeah, they needed this to round it out.
To give people an idea, if you're not familiar with Division, there was a post office, and they turned it into a gym. I think that gives you all you need to know about what happened to Wicker Park on between Ashland and Damon on Division. All right, so we're going to talk about that coming up here. Neighborhood Eats, we do every Wednesday here on the program on the Steve Cochran Show. We'll take a break. Steve Cochran Show here on 720 WGN NCL TV. Neighborhood Eats, a segment we do every Wednesday on the program. Tortello is the restaurant we're featuring today, which is really part of the new Wicker Park, the new Division Street we were just talking
Absolutely.
About.
Absolutely, and it is authentic pasta. It's a hybrid location. It's a restaurant, but you can also come in and buy pasta by the pound and sauce to take home if you want to. And we have owner Dario Muno here with
us. Ciao a tutti, grazie.
Let's see. Can you tell it's authentic?
Oh, authentic Italian. Thank you for having me.
I love the story of your childhood. Why were you inspired to open a pasta shop?
Well, I grew up in a family in Italy, you know, eating pasta twice a day. And, you know, I love pasta. I think Chicago needs something authentic. And I think it's my job to teach, to train people how Italian eat. So, and pasta shop is a beautiful idea, I think.
One of the stories that really moved me that you told me is you went to sections of Chicago and the suburbs as well, where there's artisanal Italians.
Absolutely.
Running businesses, but then they don't have anyone to pass it on to. Tell us.
Yeah, I felt like when I moved to Chicago, I felt like the old generation goes away and, you know, the tradition goes away as well. So it's my job, my responsibility to don't lose the tradition. This is why I decide to open as soon as possible a pasta shop, keeping the tradition alive with a little twist. I'm a young guy and, you know, I want to be like a bit different, but keeping the tradition on.
It's true. I know that Harlem Avenue in Chicago and that there are a lot of pasta or handmade pasta shops that still are in business up in that area. To bring this kind of shop to Wicker Park, to bring it to Division Street in an area that is really probably more known for sports bars and some upscale stuff, but do you have to educate your consumer, the people who might live in that neighborhood?
Definitely, yes. But, you know, I find that people know. People understand better and better every day what fresh quality, fresh pasta means. You know, of course, you need to teach them the cooking time. You need to teach that every single shape of pasta have the right sauce. But, you know, but so far, so good. People love it. People love it.
Dario, ciao.
Ciao.
What makes your pasta so good? Don't hold back.
I mean, the flour, we import the ingredients from Italy, the passion that we put every single day. You know, and the combination, our chef is Duncan, is fantastic. But most important thing is the passion that we put every single day. I mean, making fresh pasta from scratch it's a hard work.
And you flew in two people from Italy.
Oh yeah, I flew at the beginning. I flew 65 years old from Puglia, which she was doing for a living every single day with her grandmother. So she trained my staff to be able to keep going when she left. So that was, for me, it's an amazing, important thing that we did at the beginning.
We've seen more and more of restaurants in Chicago adapt a more traditional Italian experience. I think of Bonci Pizza. I think of some of the ways that we're no longer sort of known as the spaghetti and meatball capital of the United States.
He does not have a
meatball. Right, but the idea being that it used to be that was the Italian experience in the Chicagoland area. But more often we have seen our palates change and be more receptive to the traditional fare that comes from Italy.
Absolutely. I think Chicago is a great city. Chicago is getting better every single day on food. People understand better. People, like, especially in Wicker Park, is very melting pot. People from different country, different place around the world, so they understand different way. But, you know, I think Chicago is a great city to do that.
He grew up, your mom was from what part of Italy, and your father?
Venice. My mom, Venetia, my dad from Sardinia, which is an island on the Mediterranean.
And then you would spend summers with your dad's family.
Yeah, my dad's family are butcher and shepherds still right now. So, and my grandfather from my mother's side was 1957, opened a food shop in Venice, where he was selling food just for the rich people back then.
It's amazing, too, because you think about Italy and the Italian cuisine, there are so many different regions that represent. Oh, yeah. And because of, I don't know, of the American experience, we kind of shove that all to one experience. But if you think about it, Northern Italy is so different than Southern Italy. Like you just said, Venice, different than Calabria. Other places where they're not even remotely close to the in cuisine.
Yeah, absolutely. This is why tortello, it's a combo between north and south of Italy. Every dish is different. Like tortelli, completely north of Italy, and chiusoni, which is south of Italy, Sardinia. So it's also, tortelli is also an experience of all Italy, north and south of Italy. So all ingredients from north and some ingredients from the south, which is, to me, is unique.
And he has a great story as to why you ended up in Chicago.
Well, I'm that because the weather is, the winter is beautiful in Chicago. No, I was a manager Michelin star restaurant in London, and one day a beautiful woman walked in the door and became my wife. So the accent works well,
and thank good and lucky for us,
that's
she
how it works.
Was a Chicagoan.
All right, yeah.
And so they moved here to Chicago.
We moved to Chicago, and we met a family in Chicago, and we decided to open the restaurant in Chicago because I really love Chicago.
Running a restaurant, a Michelin starred restaurant in London, and your experience in the culinary arts, is it hard to operate and open a restaurant in Chicago?
Well, open a restaurant in general is not easy, and every day is a challenge, but I think as long I always follow my dreams and I never stop to do it, and I wish everybody never stop what they believe in, and I'm the proof that if you want something, you can do it.
What should Justin come and eat at the restaurant?
Yeah, we were going to come in on Saturday. It's funny to think about that. We're doing this segment. Yeah.
What's the favorite dish?
Well, this is the question that everyone asks me every single day. And, you know, every dish is great. But, you know, tortelli, it's our signature dish. We fill with the fresh burrata cheese, which is coming from Puglia.
So it's a filled pasta. Mm-hmm. It looks like a really fat tray, angular ravioli, kind of, right?
Yeah, I like your description. Yeah. Very fat ravioli. Yeah, I love it. Yeah, exactly. Looks like that. Let's put it on the way. But it's delicious. It's fantastic. And the simplicity of the dish, for me, it's unique.
For you, when you are trying to marry fresh pasta and the pasta that you're creating with the sauce, how does that, I heard you mention earlier in this interview just the idea that that's part of it too. You got to pair the right sauce with the right pasta, the right shape, the right kind. I would say any pasta, I almost look at it and say, I like that shape. Yeah, I like the taste of this. And so, but I didn't realize there was an art to pairing those things together.
Absolutely. And this is a question that, an observation that every day people notice. And, you know, every pasta has the right sauce. The reason why, because there are thicker pasta which grab better the sauce, keep the sauce, versus spaghetti, which need a very simple sauce.
And the thing that I learned is that when the pasta isn't being made by a machine and it's being done by hand, is that there's texture on the pasta. So the pasta actually grabs the sauce in a very different way. And the pasta, because it's made fresh every day, it's cooked al dente, but it's still sort of wet inside in the middle of the pasta because it's made fresh and doesn't completely dry out. So it's a different experience.
Absolutely.
And I would recommend. And you tell customers sometimes, don't put cheese on that, right?
I mean, that is the way we do in Italy, you know. We don't put cheese on lobster because we want to understand the fresh of the lobster. Every single ingredient, the simplicity is the most important thing for us.
We'll try to explain that to my 12-year-old.
I know. But, you know, believe or not, so many kids come back, and when they open the door, they're like, oh, my God, what is this? And makes me extremely happy because kids can be convinced very easy. And the quality that we serve is the best.
I don't want to make it seem, I feel like there's a big knock on the Italian food that sort of erupted in Chicago, the spaghetti and meatballs. Do you look down on that food? Do you say, you know what, that's not Italian food? I don't want anything to do with that.
No. I absolutely respect that. You know, it's delicious. Tortello is the way then we do it. And we are humble, we are young, and we love the way that people think in a different way. Absolutely.
And the beautiful thing, this restaurant, I was saying earlier, you can bring the whole family, and you can also go there for a date. And they welcome kids there. You've got two boys under the age of two. Congratulations.
Thank you. And open a restaurant, pretty craziness, yeah.
You did that on purpose, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, for sure. We planned that. it's Tortello. It's a very, like you said, hybrid concept. So we love family, no reservation. Family can come in day as well, easy.
And what hours are you open?
So we open 11:30 in the morning until 9:30 p.m.
All right.
And we close lunch on Monday, and we open at 5 o'clock.
All right. The restaurant is Tortello. It's in Wicker Park.
Mm-hmm. 1746 West Division.
You got it, Dario. Thanks so much for coming
in. Thank you for having me. Grazie.
Be our guest on Neighborhood Eats.
I know. And listen, go see my video on the Sun-Times website and the WGN Radio website.
There you go. You can find it both websites and look at handmade pasta being made in Wicker Park over at 1746 West Division Street.
And And listen to Daria's fabulous accent even more.
You're really, really winning with the accent today. All right, coming up, Breakfast with a Blackhawk. Alex DeBrincat's going to join us to talk about the NHL season getting underway. And, of course, the big Blackhawks game in Prague, which is coming up on Friday.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Yeah, we just heard that breaking news about Senator Sanders, who hospitalized with chest pains, and we hope for recovery, and I hope he I don't even know what the diagnosis is, but obviously breaking news into our newsroom. And of course, we wish for all the best for Senator Sanders, the presidential candidate from Vermont.
You know, he gets passionate when he starts stumping.
For all the candidates, it's got to be such a difficult and taxing
road.
Physically taxing.
Just think about all the crisscrossing they do around the country. So it's never an easy thing. So, again, well wishes and for speedy recovery to Senator Sanders. You just want a quick
My Neighborhood Eats, and that was the owner of Tortello, Dario Muni, not Muno. I said Muno. I apologize. Yeah. Dario Muni.
He came in the studio. Mm-hmm. He all of the women on this program, really, their spirits have been lifted.
He is happily married, but that doesn't mean that we just didn't find him charming.
Yeah, his scent has lingered. He's very
fashion forward.
I thought there was an echo in here, but it was actually just Vivian repeating every word that he was saying.
She loved the accent.
He made an entrance.
Passion.
And he grabbed attention. So that's what you have to do.
Mr. Dario Muni.
Yes. So coming up, Breakfast with the Blackhawk. Alex DeBrincat going to join us. They're practicing right now in Prague. Tonight's a big event as well for the Blackhawks.
Yeah, and a friend of the show, Brent Sopel, former Blackhawk, does this every year. It's the Brent Sopel Foundation annual celebrity after party, Drive for Dyslexia. It'll be at the Quarry Pub and Grill in Lamont, 1015 State Street in Lamont. They got three bands performing there. Brent will be there signing autographs 7 to 8:30, so you can bring your NHL paraphernalia to have autographed. Tickets are $20. You go to BrentSopelFoundation.org for more information. Great cause and a great event.
We did a community building I think it was a video for axe throwing. You know, I was like, went to one of the axe throwing places in town, and Brent was there, and I kind of geeked out a little bit. Like, I was being cool. You know, I like to be cool. Hey, what's up? Gimney, hey, what's up?
Is that your cool voice?
Yeah, that was my cool voice.
Oh, you haven't heard that before?
Yeah, it's
really cool. We'll break that out. We can work on that a little.
He's practicing for the day he meets Khalil Mack.
What's up, Khalil?
16-inch
Hall of Famer. I was geeking out, man. He was throwing axes right next to me. I'm like, it's Brent Sopel. How cool is that? So, yeah, it's awesome to work at a place where you get to part of the extended family as former Blackhawks player you watched on the ice. Yes, I do want to mention 16-inch softball as the WGN radio team.
Don't we have to take a break?
The WGN radio squad is going to the championship. We're playing in Forest Park. I worked this out, Dave. You'll love this.
Yeah.
So the 16-inch Hall of Fame is in Forest Park.
Mm-hmm.
And earlier, you remember last year, I made a big deal. I went out there.
Took
the team as almost like a White House visit instead of going to the White House when you win a champion. Mm-hmm. We won last year, too, G. I don't want to make a big deal about it.
Okay, back to back.
Yeah, for me, personally. The GN team, not so much. I was on a different team. But the point being that we went out to the 16-inch Hall of Fame, and when I was there, I said, you know, it'd be great next year if we play the championship. They have this amazing Park District diamond behind the 16-inch Hall of Fame. And I reminded them, and the Forest Park Park District has been especially accommodating because of the rain. And this Monday night, we're playing in Forest Park in the championship game against the Chicago Reader.
How convenient.
Wow.
Can you identify some of the players on the WGN
team? I will do that. But first, I want to get an update. Steve Rzanich has an update on Bernie Sanders. What do you have?
Justin, we have more. This is more of clarification on what's going on with the senator and presidential candidate. During a campaign event yesterday, he apparently started experiencing some chest pains and chest discomfort, was taken to the hospital, and was found to have a blockage in one artery. Mm. And so he has undergone a procedure to have two stents put in place. And his campaign says those were successfully inserted. And he is now in good spirits and apparently in good condition. But he's going to have to rest up over the next few days. And so he's canceled all of his events and campaign appearances until further notice.
Well, there you go.
Because of this heart event. So
Senator Sanders, the news this morning that he had chest pains and he had two stents placed yesterday or overnight or into this morning. And he will be resting and I wouldn't say suspending his campaign, but canceling campaign appearances.
Yeah. And if any of you, I'm sure you know people that have had these stents put in place. I have parents that had to have this happen. You know, once these stents are in, they go on some heart medication, some blood thinners and things, but they're generally pretty okay, and they survive quite a long time with no problem. So,
all right. Thanks, Steve. Right. Thanks for the update there on Senator Sanders' health and his condition. So we will update you throughout the day here on 720 WGN about that if we get more information. But, yeah. You know, back to the WGN team.
Yes.
So it's, you know,
I like how you came back.
Can you switch gears?
I know, we're talking about...
You know, there's just, I think the listeners out there want to know. I think the listeners are like...
They're demanding it.
Does anybody show up to watch these games?
This is the idea that on Monday night, there's going to be, we're doing it in the Forest Park, Park District 7501 South Harrison. Come on out. Mary Vanderbilt, come on out. And cheer on the WGN.
Well, it is in the suburbs, finally.
There is a concession stand. That's all I'm just going to put it out there.
Oh, okay.
Licorice Ropes.
Any names you can mention?
Let's see. Ernie Skatton, of course, is
Ernie's on the team.
Wasn't he interim manager at one point?
Well, the problem is, and you know, I want to get too
detailed. That's why he's the catcher, right?
Yeah, but the problem is that I'm the manager.
You don't want to get too detailed?
I'm the manager. The problem is I have duties at night. So Extension 720, especially with the White Sox and rainouts or whatever it might be, I would have to do shows. So when I had shows, I wasn't there. So Ernie was a coach in the field. And he has done a remarkable job. He should be nominated for whatever you nominate coaches for.
See, I thought you were going somewhere else. I thought you were going to say, like, you don't always agree with his managerial decisions.
He shows the great amount of respect for the manager. He shows deference.
Even though you're not there.
But he...
that you demand that.
I don't demand that.
I'm getting to see a whole other side of Justin. Now
Who else is on this team? Who else? Chad Maxwell's on the team. Joe Brand. Joe Brand hit a grand slam.
Okay.
In the semifinal.
So far, you've mentioned two people who actually work for the radio station.
Sammy Panyanovich, Pete Zimmerman. Zimmerman.
Myself, yes.
Kristen Decker's playing, which is great.
Okay, that's still three.
John Gallagher, our sales manager. John's daughter, Kelsey, plays, who's amazing.
Oh, you had
this
to go to the family.
The MVP. Mm-hmm. But, you know what? Family.
We're all family here,
Mary. We all have family.
Well, family of the family.
Some other people that have played. Rich Lenkoff has played at one point. We've had others who have played on the team. So I just feel like the GM family.
What's the chances you're going to win again?
It's very difficult against the Chicago Reader, who won in 2016 and 2017 back-to-back, and they have they're the number one seed. They beat us on a tiebreaker.
They need a different name. They just sound kind of wimpy. Chicago Reader. You know what I mean?
I'm with you. They do sound wimpy.
Do you guys have a name?
They are very wimpy. We're WGN Radio.
Chicago Reader fans can write Mary.
No, I mean,
write Justin.
It's like they sound like a bunch of librarians. They need, you know... You can whip them.
Don't give him any bulletin board fodder. What are you doing?
Come on.
Mary, are you going to show up at the championship?
I could be.
Because you got to bring this trash talk to the field.
Yeah, I know.
We need some trash talk.
Hey, you librarian. What, are you swinging a book out there?
Nothing's wrong with being a librarian.
Check your periodicals.
You're going to be our special weapon, our secret weapon.
She's going to rattle.
Mary Vanderbilt.
She'll rattle the team with all of her heckling.
Exactly, like between innings. We get giving the microphone.
I'll
and you
just
can get
do
on
cheers, and that'll just make them crazy.
So this is just the beginning of my ranting about softball. It's only Wednesday. There's plenty more to do, so we'll do that.
Bring it, not just great on the ice, great on the phone.
His dog has his own Instagram account.
Ralph's his name. Instagram's Ralph _ DeBrindog. So
DeBrindog. How great is that?
My dad likes hockey, but I prefer tennis balls. # DeBrindog.
DeBrindog. That's fantastic.
It is time for breakfast with the Blackhawk, and I guess it'd be lunch, dinner with the Blackhawk, because the Blackhawks are in Prague. Alex DeBrincat joins us, one of the stars forward on the team, looking forward to the season starting on Friday. Alex, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, first off, how's practice in Prague?
Oh, it was good. First practice here today, and just got done about 4:30 here or 4:50 here now. So we're just heading back to the hotel now.
Have you adjusted well to European times? You guys have been out there, so you feel well adjusted when it comes to time zones and jet lag and that kind of thing?
Yeah, it was a little rough the first few days, but I'm getting back on schedule now.
Have you gotten to see any of the city?
Not too much. Some of the guys walked around yesterday. We had a day off and got to explore it a little bit, but not too much. I think I'm going to try to get around. Maybe we're going to a soccer game today, so that'll be cool.
Oh, that's cool.
Maybe get around tomorrow.
I'm just hoping you can drink a couple of beers for me, because I'm sad I'm missing out on the beers.
Yeah, we'll see.
Alex, this a lot has been made about the offseason of the Blackhawks and a good preseason, and the rosters are set. But for you to look at this roster to where it is today as opposed to where it was at the end of last year, are you excited about what the Blackhawks can bring to the ice?
Yeah, for sure. I think over the offseason, made up some good trades, some good additions, and I think we have a really good team right now, and a lot of great guys in the locker room. So we're excited for the first game and ready to get things going.
You got 2 years under your belt now. You played 82 games in each of your first two seasons, and I just wonder, can you believe it's been 2 years?
No, it feels like yesterday. I just played my first game, so it's been a fun 2 years, but with that being said, no playoff experience, so looking to get there this year and hopefully have some fun there.
You got a new line mate to this point, but not new to Blackhawks fans, Andrew Shaw. What's it like skating with him?
Yeah, he's great. He's obviously a hard worker and hunts down pucks, so pretty easy playing with him.
You know, this is the first camp and preseason for Coach Colleton, of course. Do you notice a change in the way that the team is approaching this season as opposed to last?
I think it's just different with him being in training camp. I think it's a lot easier for us to go with the systems and get that stuff down. So it's been good so far.
The NHL season kicks off tonight, and the big headline, of course, the St. Louis Blues are going to be hoisting the banner for winning the Cup. Does that sting for the Blackhawks? I mean, this is the rival. This is the same division. Do you look at that, and do you kind of shut off the TV when you see that happening?
It sucks. I think anytime you see another team win, you're not really happy about it. Obviously, you want your team to win, and that's it. You don't really root for anyone else. But, I don't know if anyone will be tuning into that game. So I think we're going to, worry about ourselves right now and get ready for the season.
So, Alex, last season was 40 goals for you? 40?
40.
41. Oh, 41. I'm so sorry about that one. So are you aiming for 50 this season?
That'd be nice, but we'll see what happens. I'm not too worried about putting a number out there. I think I'm just going to try to go and hopefully we'll win some games.
All right, Alex DeBrincat in Prague. Practice just wrapped up, and they're getting ready for their big game against the Flyers on Friday. Of course, we have it here at 720 WGN. The Blackhawks season getting underway, and we expect big things for Alex. Alex, thanks for joining us in Breakfast with the Blackhawk.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, that's going to do it for the Steve Cochran Show this morning. I'm Justin Kaufman. I'm back tomorrow and Friday and Monday as well. It's so great to do radio with you guys.
Great job.
Loved doing the show with the old gang and meeting and doing work with G. Bill and Wendy up next. Great to see Bill and Wendy. I never get to see you guys anymore.
I know.
It's great to see you.
Here we are. Hi.
We still look the same, don't we?
I think you look better.
Oh, yeah.
I think you...
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Why would Mary go off on the reader the way she did?
I know, that
was,
really,
that was stunning.
And librarian.
I don't know what happened. Uh-huh. I don't know.
Never seen that side of Mary before.
I like it.
I saw Justin's glasses and just inspired
me. That did it. I'm very excited to... really, you're going to be a secret weapon. We're going to put that mic out in the fourth inning when it's the team is dragging.
Yeah.
Vandeveld comes in there and starts throwing out barbs.
It'll change
everything.
You got
to wear your glasses then on the field.
That's right. I got goggles, sports goggles. For that. What do you guys got coming up on the show?
Larry Potash will be joining us to talk about his show.
Backstory. I love that show.
Yeah, it's a great show.
Yeah.
He has really blossomed, hasn't he, Bill?
Blossomed. right before our eyes.
It's always good to give, you know, lesser known talents some new opportunities, right?
Sure is.
Right. Of course, kid.
So we brought leather jackets and we'll put them on during that segment.
That sounds good. Bill and Wendy coming up next here on 720. Like I said, a little programming note. I'm in till Monday, and we will also be doing a little extension 720, which is Thursday night as well. So I got lots to do, and I thank everybody for the show. And like I said, Bill and Wendy coming up next right after the news here on 720 WGN.